I'll say that as an executive, you take seriously your responsibility to account to Parliament. Our appreciation, therefore, arises from that recognition, Honourable Minister. All the officials present, we welcome you to this meeting. We have our support staff as well, who are most welcome. We welcome also the PBO, Parliamentary Budget Office, and all our guests. The Standing Committee on Appropriations has convened this meeting to share information with the Department on the Department's fourth quarter financial and non-financial performance for the 2016-17 financial year. We would like to have a sense of the spending patterns of the department in line with the voted budget, your strategic plans and annual performance plans. Critical to these issues is also progress on the medium-term strategic framework objectives for the 2014 to 2019 electoral term, so that your annual plans, performance plans, your targets, your allocation of the budget to different budget items speaks to the MTSF objectives, and more importantly, towards the attainment of the National Development Plan. COGTA is a very critical department because it deals with issues of service delivery largely directly on the ground, so that the effect of your work must be felt by the citizens, and it should be felt by the citizens of this country. And therefore, it's a very important department. It's critical that your work reflects the kind of service that the citizens must receive. And therefore it calls upon the department to have personnel that is skilled, so that you are able to deliver quality services. Critical to that as well is the issue of the intergovernmental relations. Because there must be very strong collaboration between the national department, the provincial departments, and the municipalities for effective service delivery and for accountability. There should also be very strong intergovernmental fiscal relations in this sense. So that there is coordinated planning, coordinated implementation, coordinated spending, coordinated support to the subnational spheres of government for effective service delivery. This committee in particular looks at issues of service delivery from the perspective of the budget allocation, the spending thereof, the outcomes or the impact that that spending has on the people of our country. And therefore our engagement today is based on all the things that I have indicated to yourselves, your annual plans, your strategic, your targets, your budget allocation, your spending, and the outcomes. That's what we'll be looking for. So with that in mind, let's go to the item, the second item on apologies. On our part, and perhaps if there are apologies from the department as well, we would allow you to indicate to us. If there is any apology from an official who was supposed to be here but for various reasons would not have been here. Yeah.
Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, honourable members. Good morning to the department. We have a number of apologies from members. We have an apology from the Chairperson, Honourable Khosa. We have an apology from Honourable Ashoka Sithole and Honourable Manana, who are off sick. And an apology from Mr. McLachlan, who is attending the Auditor General Committee, but will join this committee meeting as it goes on. And an apology from Mr. Topham, who is on study leave.
Thank you. Any indication from the department? No. Thank you very much. Let's go straight to the presentation. In terms of the agenda, we're on item 3, the presentation by COCTA and MISA. We will have then deliberations and conclude our meeting. Thank you very much. Let me hand over to yourselves. If the minister could have the opening remarks and then, as you see fit, allow your officials to take us through.
Thank you very much, Chairperson of the moment. You know, when I arrived here, I was a bit confused. That's why I even asked you if maybe you are leading the right committee. But the last time we interacted at this level, it was when the two of us were still in the whipper. But thank you very much, Chairperson, as the acting Chairperson of the Standing Committee on Appropriation, and the honorable members of the Standing Committee on Appropriation, and of course officials who are here with us from both your support staff as well as our department. I want to take this opportunity on behalf of our collective to convey our sincere gratitude for allowing us and giving us this important opportunity to provide a platform that will accord us an opportunity to interact with honorable members today. And I am also accompanied, Chairperson, by the DG, of the Department of Traditional Affairs, who is also acting as the DG for DCOC, Dr. Noila, and the acting Chief Executive Officer of Municipal Infrastructure Support Agency, Mr. Vimba, and Deputy Director Generals and other senior managers. We have a very full complement here. Honourable Chairperson, before I proceed with my required remarks, allow me to say that we, as the family of COCTA, we deeply value the role that this committee on appropriation is playing. And of course, as we are all aware, the role that you play is an oversight role in respect of the work of our department. We value your role. Maintaining this very direct and open channel between us, we think is an important mechanism to progress in the fulfillment of our mandate. As COCTA, we aspire to be a fit-for-purpose organization, an organization that is geared towards changing the quality of life of our people for the better. Now, the medium-term expenditure framework cycle, 2016-2017 to 2018-2019, will coincide with the end of the medium-term strategic framework 2014-2015 to 2018-2019. I think, Chairperson, this is an opportunity for all of us to exert energy and improve our efforts. Today, as a COCTA family, we present our department's financial and non-financial performance for the first quarter of 2016-2017. And Chair, I must indicate that according to my own view, the performance as at 2017 was estimated at 91% of the quarterly targets, a very significant improvement compared to previous financial years. After dissecting our performance, I can confirm that the total unaudited expenditure of the department amounts to 95.6% of the total appropriation of what was allocated, which was just above 69 billion. Entirely, Chair, in our presentation, the following achievements will be highlighted. Subsequent to the promulgation of the regulations of conditions of employment for senior managers in 2014, the department is constantly monitoring appointments. And I am impressed, Chair, but I must also confess that I know there is some resistance and uncomfortability in some of the municipalities and provinces as to how we monitor this appointments program. But I must indicate that the majority of senior managers since July 2014 are having the requisite qualification and competencies as contained in the regulations, and we are convinced that this is taking us a step closer to ensure that we have a professionalized public sector, or maybe a professionalized local government sector. And I must also indicate, Chair and members, that post the local government election, the department already embarked on the process of transforming, working, of course, with National Treasury, the National School of Government, and SALGA. We have successfully facilitated the rollout of the integrated councillor induction program to all newly elected councillors. I must indicate, Chair, that the training entirely focus on leadership and municipal governance, public participation and accountability, councillor oversight, municipal planning with a view to transform municipal space, local economic development, financial management. And to this end, I can confirm that more than 9,000 councillors, including for the first time in the history of the sector, traditional leadership has been trained. On accelerating implementation of the back-to-basic, Chair, we are seeing some improvements in the overall performance of municipalities through the monthly dashboard reports. We have amalgamated 40 unviable municipalities, resulting in the reduction of the number of municipalities from 278 to 257. We held a successful presidential local government summit under the theme Transforming Municipal Spaces for Radical Social and Economic Development. Despite our delivered achievement, Chairperson and members, municipalities have been confronted by a series of problems. Inter alia, we note problems around service delivery and backlog challenges related to failure to spend the municipal infrastructure grant in some municipalities, but also challenges of aging infrastructure. Related to that also is poor maintenance and also the cost for refurbishment and replacement of infrastructure. Chairperson, poor communication accountability continue to haunt us, and this, of course, is an issue that really compromised the relationship of some of our municipal councils with our communities. We also continue to encounter in some municipalities problems with political administrative interface, but also corruption and fraud and poor financial management, e.g. negative audit opinions as reflected in the recent audit of AG's report is some of the problems that is still haunt us. Chairperson, without maybe going to the details of what will be covered in our presentation, allow me in a moment that I introduce the DG. The DG will make a presentation on all the issues outlined in your letter, including issues raised previously by this committee. I think our team was able to appear before the committee in December, as well as March and June. This year, December last year, and March and June this year. So I think the presentation will be able to cover also some of those issues that is raised by the committee. Chairperson, once more, thank you very much for according us this important opportunity. And through your permission, allow me then to introduce Dr. Noila, who will then take us through the presentation of our team. Thank you very much.
DG, go ahead and give us your...
Thank you very much. I just wanted to also introduce the team that is with me so that you know what the various leaders who are here represent. Firstly, the chairperson of the audit committee, Mr. Sintu Mule, is also with us, accompanying the minister. And we have Mr. Fossey, who is the Deputy Director General, responsible for local government support, and Mr. Mkashuping, who is also acting Deputy Director General, Institutional Development. We also have Mr. George C. Tisho, who is acting CWP Program Manager. We also have Mrs. Neyman, who is our CFO, and Mr. Vimba was mentioned by the Minister, who is the Acting CEO of MISA. Mrs. Mabidilana is the Head of Monitoring and Evaluation. Ms. Bembe is responsible for Internal Audit and Risk Management. And Mr. Pejiso is the Director in Internal Audit. Mr. Savelo Mulife, who is responsible for planning and monitoring and evaluation. Mr. Farmer is the Deputy Director General Corporate Services. We also have Senior Manager, Mr. Victor Matada from MISA, and also the Ministry representatives. We have the Chief of Staff and also the Minister's Advisor, Mr. Mohammed, and Mrs. Gosnell from the Office of the Director General. Mr. Mulefe is going to take us through the presentation. Thank you.
Okay. Yes, go ahead.
Thanks, Chair. Good morning, members of the committee. I will be taking you through the response to the request by the Standing Committee on Appropriation with regards to the performance of the department for the fourth quarter on financial and non-financial performance. The presentation is outlined as per the letter received from the committee. We will be presenting the progress on issues that were raised previously by the committee, and also touching on the main areas of under and over expenditure service delivery implications or on slow expenditure. We will also provide a response on the audit findings, as well as a strategy, our strategy to improve financial management within municipalities in relation to the audit outcomes, and as well as our detailed performance per program, and then give recommendations. Chair, on the 5th of December, engagements with the committee brought about some recommendations, and the first recommendation was that we need to ensure that we engage on the review of the intergovernmental relations framework. I must confirm that a task team has been established between DCOC, National Treasury, and DPME, and Department of Justice and DPSA in planning for this month to engage on the concept document of the Presidential Commission that needs to be established in order to facilitate the review of the intergovernmental relations framework. So within this month, there will be a meeting that will kickstart the establishment of that kind of a presidential commission. With regards to the issues of the new jobs and existing jobs, as well as cost per job that were created through our community work program, we committed to provide new work opportunities amounting to 1,500 for the 2017-18 financial year. We also held engagements with National Treasury during the MTF planning period in July 2017. However, due to issues of cost containment measures, there are limited resources to upscale beyond the 1,500 within this financial year. I must also say that the work on CWP is also part of Outcome 9 and is part of the impact indicator that the chairperson was talking about in ensuring that we provide work opportunities to the unemployed. And now, in relation to the cost aspect per participant, we're saying the cost per participant is amounts to 14,288, and we are continuing on issues related to ensuring that we should engage with DPME and National Treasury to ensure that public employment program have specific focus on data collection monitoring. We can confirm that we have engagements with National Treasury and in terms of developing a new community work program implementation model, which will facilitate improvements on data collection monitoring mechanism and coordination. We also have partnerships that are also being established and maintained in areas of food gardening, greening, and also home-based care. So we have indeed made some progress in terms of those issues that were raised on the 5th of December last year. We also had engagements on the next slide, engagements on the 14th of March 2017. And one of the recommendations was that we need to, with DPME and COCTA, we need to ensure that the cost reflective tariffs are communicated to communities. We are in a process of developing a tariff policy that will guide municipalities in communicating the true and reasonable associated cost of supplying electricity, water, and sanitation, as well as waste, including issues of capital, operating, maintenance, and administration. And we're saying also there are also issues of that will be in line with issues of adhering to Section 71(3) of the Municipal Systems Act on ensuring that we apply differentiation, and also taking into consideration the indigent policy that needs to be applied to those that are not able to pay for services. On the issue of us ensuring that we engage with the technical vocational education and training colleges, we have since with CWP has partnered with the Department of we have engagements with the technical, vocational, and education and training colleges, and this is premised on facilitating and bridging opportunities towards gainful employment of the unemployed youth. We're also having partnerships with the departments of social development in terms of placing some of the CWP participants on the early childhood development centers to provide support in that regard. So when we come to issues of the departmental expenditure, out of the 73 billion allocation, our expenditure was at 69.8 billion, which amounts to 95.6%. And I will elaborate further on the next slide on issues of where really the under expenditure is sitting. The total unaudited expenditure of the department amounts to 95.6% of the total appropriation of 69.8 billion, as the minister pointed out. Our apportion of the expenditure is only 752,000 of the total allocation. The majority of the 2.2 billion, which is 3.2% of the total transfers, is based on the expenditure that was allocated to municipalities. But we're saying that we're working with MISA in assisting municipalities to improve their municipal infrastructure grant expenditure through improving their planning and project management capabilities. When it comes to issues of categorizing the under expenditure, under goods and services, internally, the 752,000 the under expenditure was due to unforeseen factors related to pre- and post-election local government election activities, as well as issues of our procurement plan. We also had some delays in terms of the accurate invoicing from creditors. Now, the issue that I was talking about also is related to the disaster disaster relief grants, which are the grants that are allocated and also are related to the uncertainty. So we cannot be able to spend such funds if the disasters are not declared. Also, I've pointed out on issues of offsetting of local government equitable share in terms of the Division of Revenue Act, some of the pressures that caused us to underspend. The underspending on compensation of employees is related to the moratorium of filling of posts, as well as the issue of the budget deficit in the outer years from 2017-2019 financial year. We also noted the request that we need to provide some input in terms of the service delivery implication from the slow expenditure that we experienced. The implication on this slow expenditure are mainly on issues of infrastructure development, and the contributing factors are that of poor governance. There are also political instability that the minister talked about, inadequate skilled personnel, and the other areas on low expenditure, as stated above, is due to withholding of transfers, as I said, and in the 2017-18 financial year, the department is looking at various options to ensure that the withholding of grants does not disadvantage the affected municipalities. And one of those issues is to ensure that the MISA capacity is currently being enhanced, and that we also ensuring that we currently aligned in the MIG function, which is allocated in both DCOG and MISA to improve our capacity to support municipalities. Chair, in your open remarks, you talked about the issue of us providing progress on the MTSF 2014-19. We are the custodians of Outcome 9, and we coordinating other sector departments in terms of provision of basic services, and but for us in the main, we're coordinating the CWP. And as per the cabinet memorandum that was submitted for the first quarter, the figures on access to reliable water is at 69.9%. The cumulative figure on access to energy is that 769,426 households were connected to the grid, and 52,778 were connected to non-grid. We continue to ensure that we established ward committees, and as at the end of March 2017, 90% of the 4,392 ward committees were established. And we, as the minister said, we are continuing to implement regulation on compliance to minimum competencies. And on issues of CWP, as at the end of March 2017, we are sitting at 243,162 participants that are benefiting from the program. Getting into the issues of the audit findings for the department on predetermined objectives, there were findings on issues of usefulness of reported performance information. And we have done an assessment on strengthening our technical indicator description in the main to elaborate on issues of saying how is it that how are we going to support municipalities, and elaborating on the word support to say what is it that we do to ensure that we support municipalities. We also facilitated compliance of the department annual performance plan in line with the framework that has been issued by the Department of Performance Monitoring and Evaluation, and we have also revised our policy and program performance information that is in line with the framework, as well as getting advice also from our audit committee. We then saying we are getting there in terms of improvement of our predetermined objectives. Also issues on reliability of reported information. We have put systems in place to ensure that the portfolio of evidence that is being submitted is being validated and approved by the relevant senior managers. And on a quarterly basis, at our quarterly review meetings, we conduct such engagements to ensure that the portfolio of evidence is true and reflect the true picture of the performance that has been affected. On issues of expenditure management, the key finding was that we need to have effective steps that were not taken to prevent irregular expenditures. We have constantly engaged with the audit committee and the internal audit, as well as our internal committees, to ensure that we prevent irregular expenditure, and we have reviewed and strengthened our existing processes and standard operating procedures for all types of payments and for implementation. We also facilitating the implementation of approved consequence management actions as required, and we have put measures in place to ensure that all suppliers that are doing business with the department are registered on the National Treasury Central Supplier Database. And on issues of procurement and cost management, the key findings from the AG were that goods and services of the transaction value above 500,000 were procured without inviting competitive bidders. And our progress in that regard is that a process is underway to review our SOPs, and that we have put in place existing internal controls for the procurement of goods and services by all end users, including those of the CWP implementing agents, which is one of the issues that were raised strongly by the Auditor General. There were also issues on asset management. We had engagements, and the department conducted a comprehensive fiscal verification of all assets including those of CWP and an inventory and consumables, and confirmed existing existence of those consumables, and including the barcodes. And we also have valued all CWP assets that are within the value in terms of the asset management framework. We also conducted assessed intangible asset and in disposed of as required. The AG also raised issues of financial and performance management that management did not implement proper record keeping. Now, our standard operating procedures are directly talking to that issues of ensuring that we keep records of payment and financial documents to ensure that when the Auditor General audits our documents, they are in order in terms of compliance with financial prescripts. We're also fast-tracking in investigations and implication of consequence management and actions as and when it is required. The committee also requested us to give input on our strategy on financial management within municipalities. Our strategy to support municipalities is underpinned by our Back to Basics program. And our approach is holistic and is informed by those five pillars that are outlined in our B2B program on governance, financial management, capacity building, and resilient institutions. We undertook a process of saying soon after our local government election, we held the presidential local government elections, which highlighted...
Sorry, Chair. We don't find that page on our presentation, yeah? Is it somewhere else?
Page 14.
14 is different. That one is not 14. It's showing 16.
There was also another one.
It's not here. Thanks.
Chairperson. Chairperson, I think in the opening remarks we forgot to mention that we updated the presentation. We apologize for that. Yeah.
All right. We will let's play it by the ear then.
Okay.
Okay. Continue.
We were saying that soon after the 2016 local government election, and after the presidential local government election, there were issues that were highlighted in terms of strengthening our B2B program, and one of them is on that pillar of strengthening financial management. When the minister came. One of the key issues that he mentioned was that financial management must find expression in B2B, and that we need to deal with the financial health of municipalities to improve their performance. And we have then ensured that we are engaging sector and provincial co-actors to ensure that the summit resolutions are effected in all our plans. In addition to that, we, subsequent to the election, we had a joint support program in collaboration with SALGA and National Treasury and the School of Leadership and Governance Academy to train municipal CFOs on matters that are related to financial, to municipal finance. We also, the Academy also provides training programs to councillor development, traditional leadership, management capacity building, union leadership, as well as issues of data and strategic initiatives. Also, the department has also embarked on the process of ensuring that we amend the Municipal Structures Act to legislate MPECs and ensure that a team of municipal financial management support is currently being established within this financial year to monitor and support those municipalities that are struggling in terms of financial management and audit outcomes. We also processed the issue of promulgating competency regulations for local government in order to ensure that senior managers recruited have the suitable skills, competencies to execute their functions, and that also includes the CFOs. So with respect to the performance of the department, as the minister in his open remarks said, we only have two projects that were not achieved. The first one is the one that is linked with the implementation of the IUDF. We had planned in our APP that we were going to facilitate the 6 partial contracts for key restructuring zones in district and metros. We have not been able to do that because during the course of the year, two of appointed senior specialists to perform these functions resigned. However, there were other work that there was other work that we did in conjunction with National Treasury in terms of the built environment performance plan for the 8 metros. We were able to work with Treasury to ensure that all the 8 metros have a built environment performance plan. The other area that we are not able to attain was to ensure that we support metros to develop economic development strategies, and this was due to delays in finalization of one of the Murutili small town regeneration strategy due to other engagements within municipalities, and that resulted in us not being able to engage there. We only supported the Buffalo City municipality with the development of the informal economy strategy. The other programs we have achieved in terms of us ensuring that we continuously monitor expenditure of MIG. 517 MIG site visits were conducted in the fourth quarter. We also reporting on a quarterly basis progress against our implementation of the Back to Basics program. On institutional development, we've talked about us ensuring that the municipal regulations incorporating minimum competency requirements are enforced, and we then have achieved that target. We also achieved a target of ensuring that we develop a report that outlines issues of anti-corruption cases against the forensic reports. Our work on the 10 dysfunctional municipalities that we have supported to institutional complaints management processes was also achieved. We also had supported municipalities, those 10 dysfunctional identified municipalities, to create effective community engagement mechanisms. Still on institutional development, we have supported 30 municipalities to develop their revenue plans and outcomes of the MPRA assessment and recommendations were communicated to those municipalities, and corrective actions were facilitated. So we have achieved that. 7 Category A and Category B municipalities were supported to establish functional work committees. On issues of National Disaster Management Center, we have compiled a report on the implementation of National Fire and Safety Strategy and a national report on the implementation of the National Disaster Management Advocacy and Awareness were developed as well. We have pointed out on issues of work opportunities. As at the end of March 2017, 243,162 work opportunities were maintained. We also continued to form partnerships and also train participants on CWP related matters, and the partnership were also involving issues of cooperative organization for the upgrading of numeracy training. In overall, Chair, as the Minister said, we have achieved 91% of our planned targets, and only two, which is 9%, were not achieved. So we recommend that the committee take note of our fourth quarter financial and non-financial performance, including those issues that were raised. And we have also included in the narrative some of the issues that were requested, also that relate to the entities like SALGA and Municipal Demarcation Board. So this is the presentation that we're putting forward. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you very much. I suggest we take the next presentation on MESA, and then we can deal with the presentation jointly. Would that be okay? Okay. Let's have that presentation on MESA. Chairperson, I wanted to suggest if we have hard copies, perhaps we could start with hard copies while they're sorting out technology, if you agree.
Yes, we do have hard copies. But is it not going to the presenter? Maybe the presenter must then shift away from those operations there. It's coming on now, isn't it? Okay.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Before I start, Chairperson, our DG omitted to introduce one of our officials at MISA. It's Fezeka Stish, is the CFO of MISA. I think she omitted because it's her birthday today. So maybe DG wanted me to also communicate that today it's her special day. Chairperson, before I start, I must really firstly apologize that we submitted our presentation a bit late. A reason, Chair, is that when the invitation was sent to the department for this session today, there was no specific issue that was highlighted for MISA to talk to. Upon inquiry, we were then given 4 points that MISA should brief the committee on. The first issue, a brief discussion on the financial and non-financial performance of MISA. Update on the program toward providing municipal infrastructure provisioning and maintenance for accelerated service delivery. Point three, the effectiveness of MISA, which in the main entail through the provisioning of technical capacity deployments in relation to the 2015-16 audits. Maybe if I pause on that point, Chairperson, we deliberated as a unit whether the outcomes that the committee is referring to are municipal outcomes or MISA audit outcomes. Then we result that it talks to the municipal audit outcomes. So our presentation will be talking to municipal audit outcomes in relation to the MISA effectiveness in addressing those issues. Then the last issue, support measures for those municipalities that remain severely challenged and those that have shown significant improvement. So the presentation, Chair, will then talk to all those issues, Chairperson. If I may zoom into the presentation, Chair, in our introduction, Chairperson, we are again emphasizing to the committee the fact that MISA was audited by AG, and we again received an unqualified audit opinion, of course, with matters of emphasis. This is the fourth consecutive year outcome, Chair, where we receive unqualified audit opinions, this establishment of MISA. And, Chair, for the committee to note that on the performance information, we received unqualified audit opinion with regard to one of MISA's core programs, technical skills. Before, it was an adverse opinion, so there is an improvement. And we received a disclaimer opinion on the other core program called Technical Support Program. But this, Chairperson, for committee to note, we are contesting with AG. We have raised our objection with AG with regard to this outcome. So we are expecting AG to reconsider their position and review the disclaimer opinion on this particular matter. Also on the financials, AG raised irregular expenditure findings on a number of transactions, in particular those that related to approvals that were made by the accounting officer for advertising for a shorter period of time, which is provided for in terms of Regulation 16A 6.3 of Treasury Regulations. AG felt that the reasons that were provided were not valid enough, therefore declared that irregular expenditure. So we are contesting that as well. So there is a meeting with National Treasury, which is scheduled for the 28th of this month, where we'll be deliberating on the interpretation of that regulation. I've already spoke to this slide, Chairperson, in terms of how much I have fed thus far since 2015-16 up to now in terms of audit outcomes. Coming to the financial report, Chairperson, MISA's allocation for 2016-17 was 349 million rand. Out of that, we have managed to spend 295, which represent 85% of MISA's allocation. And there is an underspending of about 54.2. We have requested to retain this money, Chairperson, from National Treasury. And the reason for this underspending in the main, there is there are two key things that contributed to this. One, the structure for MISA took longer to be approved. It was approved in January this year. So we had to then make sure that we do job profiles for all the positions that were there, and also evaluations, and it took longer, so we did not spend on our organizational structure as expected. And another major contributor, there is a flagship program, Chair, that we call Regional Management Support Program, which is an institutional turnaround program. Treasurer gave us 80 million rand to pilot this program. Unfortunately, we were unable to spend the ring-fenced amount which was allocated to MISA because of the delay in terms of procurement, but Treasurer has agreed that we will retain the money. So we have since appointed now. Coming to the performance information per program, Chairperson, you will see, Chairperson, that in terms of performance, total performance is 63% in terms of the achievements. But if you look into the major contributor of this in terms of the performance, it's around program one because of the issue of structure, which was approved late, as well as the issue of performance around around internal audit as well, because there were the capacity-related issues there. We only filled the position of the chief audit executive very late last year. And if you look into the core programs, the performance there for them, program two, which is the MISA core program, which takes about over 80% of our budget, there we achieved 86% of our planned targets. Also on program three, which also is our core program, we achieved 80% of our planned targets. The remainder of the slide, Chair, I'm not sure if I should go through each slide, but it's performance per program. The first slide was just summarizing the whole performance, and then we zoom in terms of which programs we were busy on and what have been the achievement. On program one, we had planned, Chair, one, to make sure that we comply with our 2017-18 APP approvals and submission on time. That was achieved. And also on the issue of six approved performance reports, quarterly performance reports, that was partially achieved. The non-compliance with the prescribed time frame was due to delayed completion of the audit by AG. AG last in the last financial year, Chair, only finalized the MISA audit in December. They had to restart it because they found that there were errors in the process that they were involved in, and they requested this Parliament for extension of time to finalize the audit, and they finalized it in December. Hence, we were unable to achieve all the six targets in terms of the reports. Also, we had planned to ensure that two approved program and project monitoring and evaluation reports per year as per approved monitoring and evaluation plan are done. We have partially achieved this target. We have done evaluation of one of the planned evaluation program was delayed. Evaluation of one of the planned evaluation projects was delayed until the end of the financial year. The delay of the service, the appointment of service provider is the one that contributed to the partial achievement. We have since appointed a service provider who is doing the evaluation of the municipal PMUs. And that appointment has since been done, hence we are saying it's a partial achievement. Again, on the issue of the risk register update, that was not achieved due to the issue of incapacity issues within the risk and internal audit unit. We have since appointed the chief audit executive. So this financial year, we will be achieving this target. Again, the risk reports were not partially achieved because of the delays in terms of the appointment of the chief audit executive. Again, in terms of the three-year rolling strategic plan for internal audit, we partially achieved because of the same challenge of internal audit unit, which was not fully capacitated, and which were indicating that this year we'll achieve because we have now the chief internal audit executive, and also the process to appoint have commenced officials within the risk management unit. I'll just zoom in to the one that I partially achieved, Chair, for the interest of time. Also, around the ICT policies, Chair, we had a situation where the senior manager for ICT resigned. Again, it affected our performance, and we're in a process of filling in that position, and we have since reviewed our ICT policies, of course, we're supported by DECOG IT. But that was partially achieved because we didn't achieve it as planned. On the non-achieved, we had planned to achieve at least 98% of spending by financial year end, and we did not achieve that again due to delays in the approval of the revised structure. As a result, we had a low spending on the compensation of employees, as well as the delayed appointment of the regional management support contractors, which I've already spoken to. We have since appointed those regional management support contractors, and also are in a process now of filling in our structure, our approved structure. So we'll then improve in this current financial year in this area. On the finance strategic objective, we have achieved all the three targets, so I'm not going to go through them. Also, on the technical support, I will only zoom in on those targets that were not achieved. One target was not achieved, again, which I've already spoken to, the regional management support contract, which was supposed to have been awarded last year, which not awarded because of the delays in terms of the procurement. The tender had to be cancelled and re-advertised. What we have since now appointed for this target, we have appointed three contractors who will be deployed in three regions, OR Tambo, Amathole, and Skukuni. Also, under technical skills, we had planned to provide 90 learners with well skills training. This was not achieved. We managed to provide at least 55 learners with experiential training. MISA could not secure replacement chairperson of opportunities for these learners because most municipalities, they prefer to host young graduates for workplace training than the learners. But through our engagement with provinces and municipalities, we have since achieved the targeted number of learners that we have wanted to place in municipalities for the financial year that we are reporting on. But that achievement was achieved a bit late after the financial year has ended. 50 graduates were recruited and placed with municipalities for workplace training and or mentorship towards professional skills training. We have planned to place 50, but we managed to recruit more than 50, 66. And we're seeing more graduates here were enrolled in the program in response to requests from municipalities, so we overachieved this target. Also, we had planned to have 300 municipal officials trained on technical skills training, and we've managed to train over 887 learners. The target was exceeded due to requests for training of more officials than planned and allocation of additional funding as well from the retained surplus from the previous financial year. So we managed to overachieve this target. 164 students were provided with bursaries for studies in technical professions. We achieved this target. Target not achieved. Two national framework contracts for municipal infrastructure goods and services. We planned to, as part of assisting municipalities with the challenges around the supply chain, we planned to set up a range of national framework contracts, and we planned to have two in the previous financial year. This was not achieved due to delays in the procurement process arising from non-responsiveness of the received bids from potential service providers. The tender process has been restarted and will be concluded in the third quarter of this financial year, 2017-18. Coming to MISA interventions, Chairperson, in relation to the audit outcomes that I spoke to earlier, we first look into what were the issues in terms of 2015-16 audit outcome for municipalities, in particular municipalities that are supported by MISA. The issues, we have listed them on the first column. One, target set for 35% of infrastructure projects funded through MIG were not achieved, and was also the issue of lack of effective contract management leading to incomplete MIG projects. Now, what is MISA doing in relation to this? We have 46 civil engineers and electrical engineers, respectively, deployed in 40 targeted municipalities to assist with MIG project management. Out of this, through the MISA support, 32 of these municipalities have improved their spending on MIG to at least over 85% in 2016-17. We have also provided training of municipal officials on the range of GCC contracts, in particular infrastructure contracts and other short courses, with the aim of improving the capacity of municipal officials, in particular the PMUs, on contracts management and ensuring that municipalities improve in terms of their spending and quality of infrastructure developed. Another issue was the non-compliance with SCM prescripts in the procurement of goods and services for infrastructure projects. This issue, Chairperson, though it's an issue that does not necessarily relate to technical capacity, it's an institutional issue. What MISA did in working, of course, with our partners, National Treasury and the department, was to say we need to come up with a total turnaround kind of a program, so rather than just focusing on technical issues. Hence, we came up with this program called Regional Management Support Program, which is a pilot program funded by Treasury, to say let's focus on the whole value chain in terms of the municipal water function, including supply chain related challenges, governance related challenges, financial management related challenges, infrastructure and project management related challenges, including HR related challenges. So that we don't just deal in with just one component of the problem, but deal with the whole institutional challenge. And this program, is the one that we had planned to implement last year, but due to delays in terms of procurement, we then moved to this financial year, and we have since appointed for three districts, Skukune District Municipality, Or Tambo, and Amatole District Municipality. So it's a pilot, and we will then see, you know, from lessons learned, what is it that needs to be done, and our plan is to roll it out in a number of water services authorities so as to improve the issues around the management of these municipalities across the value chain. And another issue that was raised by AG, the lack of policies and plans for maintenance of water and roads and infrastructure, and inadequate budget for maintenance of existing infrastructure. In this area, 21 municipalities were supported by MISA with the development of operations and maintenance plans and policies, as well as training. We've done training of artisans and placement of artisans in these municipalities. And we have done, in terms of the effectiveness, 372 apprentices have been trained to become artisans in the 2016-17, and we are planning to place 100 or qualified artisans this current financial year. And we are working with municipalities to make sure that we support them in terms of improving the operations and maintenance culture in these municipalities. And these artisans will then assist these municipalities towards improvement of operations and maintenance. The issue of inadequate capacity for project management is another issue raised by AG. What we have done, Chairperson, as you know, the department through MIG, There is a 5% that is set aside for the establishment of PMUs in municipalities. And we said as a department, notwithstanding this 5% that these PMUs that are appointed are supported through MIG, but municipalities are still struggling to spend MIG, what is the problem? Is it a problem of planning, or is it a problem of capacity of these PMUs, or what? Then we agreed that we'll do an evaluation of the state and effectiveness of these PMUs, and we've just appointed a service provider who is doing this evaluation, and the report will then inform us in terms of what else do we need to do to improve the capacity of these municipalities in terms of project management units. But over and above this, MISA is deploying engineers in these municipalities to make sure that they perform. But we are saying that is not sustainable going forward. We can't always deploy engineers. We need to make sure that these municipalities have got their own capacity. And over and above that, we have trained 887 municipal officials on a range of technical courses as indicated earlier. And we have deployed 66 graduates, engineering and town planners in these municipalities. And 372 apprentices are being trained as well to add, you know, in terms of the capacity that is required to improve the capacity of these municipalities to manage infrastructure projects. Another issue raised is the decline in financial viability of municipalities due to low revenue collection. We've initiated a program where we appoint service providers to assist with revenue enhancement plans or strategies for a number of municipalities. We have a success story in Otsoron, where we assisted Otsoron with the revenue enhancement and we appointed a service provider who assisted there. And the success story there is that Otsoron reduced its overall debt level from 110 million to 28.5 million and debt to Eskom from 54 million to 8.3 million. So for us, it's not something that we have been doing, the issue of revenue enhancement. But we said because of the issues of challenges around operations and maintenance, it's an area that we must look at, and we can see that it does work, you know, and the authority today has really improved because of MISA support. And we are also having the same support in Canaland. The contractor is still on, so we'll learn and see what is it that we'll achieve out of that one as well. The poor infrastructure planning is one of the issues raised in the audit. We support municipalities with the development of infrastructure master plans. We have supported 21 municipalities in the 2016-17 financial year to develop master plans for water and sanitation, waste management, electricity services, as well as roads. Another issue raised, Chairperson, the issue of misalignment between projects implemented and areas of backlog. In this area, our intervention, we have come up through the MCC led by our Honorable Minister with a collaborative program to align the development of bulk infrastructure and regulation in 18 municipalities. And we said we will pilot this in 7 municipalities, 2 in the Eastern Cape, which is our friends are focusing on the Mbizana Dam, as well as OR Tambo, and also KwaZulu-Natal, 2 in KwaZulu-Natal, which will be Ugu and Harikwala. And in Northwest, we have Matibeng, and in Limpopo, we have Skukuni and Mupani. We've just omitted to list that. There were Skukuni and Mupani. Engagement with these municipalities have been initiated, and we have established the technical teams that are there now engaging with these municipalities. Another finding is 50% of municipalities with water losses above 30%. As in collaboration with DWS, MISA is supporting water services authorities to develop 5-year reliable water and sanitation service delivery plans. Plans have been developed for 16 water services authorities, municipalities, and implementation support is being provided by MISA and DWS on this through the PMO. Program to improve municipal infrastructure provision, that is summary. We're saying through the PMO, MISA is championing the following 2 strategic interventions, the regional management support contracts program that I spoke to, and the bulk and regulation infrastructure program. The regional management support program is an institutional turnaround that seeks to improve infrastructure delivery systems and processes in selected municipalities. I've already indicated we've started implementation in OR Tambo, Amatola, and Skukuni. The program to address misalignment of bulk between regulation and infrastructure is a collaborative initiative involving the national stakeholders, DCOG, MESA, DPSA, National Treasurer, DWS, SALGA, and Department of Energy. This is a program that we've recently initiated, and we're busy with the consultation with municipalities. I've already spoken to the municipalities that we're piloting. MISA has initiated the process of conducting an assessment of the impact of technical support to municipalities through an independent service provider. One of the requirements by the committee was the effectiveness of MISA interventions in municipalities. What we said as MISA last year was that we need to do an impact evaluation of MISA support. And we have we're in a process now to appoint a service provider who will do the impact evaluation on all the municipalities that MISA have supported to understand to what extent are we making an impact in those municipalities. Support for severely challenged municipalities. We are saying municipalities with record of persistent underspending on conditional grants have been identified for assistance through direct delivery support program. When I was presenting, Siabelo talked to this particular issue. This issue involves the conversion of MIG allocations for targeted municipalities into Schedule 6B grant in terms of the division of revenue to enable minister to support those municipalities to improve their spending in those municipalities and implement some of their projects direct. But it's not only MISA, we have identified the number of implementing agents that we need to work with, like DPSA, as well as water boards. In the MISA APP for 2017-18 includes the deployment of qualified artisans in municipalities with limited capacity for infrastructure operation and maintenance. The target for 2017-18 is to deploy 100 artisans through this program and to increase the number in the 2 outer years to 170 and 200, respectively. MISA also plans to enhance technical capacity in municipalities by training general workers in selected municipalities towards qualifying as artisans over 2017-18 in terms of recognition of prior learning framework. MISA is also involved in the task team driving the implementation of support packages for Free State municipalities that are under Section 139. These are Mafube, Masilonyane, and Metsemahulu local municipalities. We have our engineers who are there working with the team that is turning around those municipalities in terms of Section 139. In terms of key challenges and remedial actions, the issue of high rate of vacancies in the organization has been a serious challenge, but this issue has now been addressed in that our structure has since been approved, and we are in a process now of filling in these positions. The issue of capacity change within supply chain has always been a serious issue. I think it was raised as a challenge even in this parliament last when he came here to present our annual report. I must report, Chairperson, that there has been a huge improvement. One, we have filled a number of positions within supply chain, and over and above that, we have appointed a service provider who's doing core sourcing with MESA. Now, if you go to our audit report, you will see that in terms of findings on supply chain, they have reduced dramatically. Lack of staff for internal audit and risk management function impacting on performance. This is a challenge that I spoke to. What we have done now, the position of the chief audit executive was filled in the third quarter of 2016-17, and the process of appointing a service provider to complement capacity is also underway. The appointment of technical professionals on short-term consultancy contracts resulting in instability. Before MISA was operating through what we call technical consultants, we would hire engineers on contracts, but through consultancy contract. And this was a challenge raised by a number of municipalities and stakeholders as well. So what we have since done through the revised structure, we have converted these consultancy contract to permanent positions. So in our structure now, we have 53 civil engineers that have been approved as permanent. We have about 15 planners and 15 electrical engineers. Now, you are saying technical positions on the newly approved structure are being prioritized. We have finalized, for instance, the job profiles, and with the assistance of DPSA, because these are this position belong to what is called occupation is OSD. So through OSD processes, we have finalized the evaluation of these technical positions, and in few weeks to come, we'll be issuing out adverts to fill the positions. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Okay. Thank you. Any further additions? None? All right. Honorable members, Honorable Sheikh Imam, Honorable Snokwanyana, go ahead.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Minister, and your team for that presentation. Let me start off by expressing my disappointment that as the Appropriations Committee, you had a summit, you had the Back to Basics program that you were initiating, and we were not invited to that, and maybe it would have helped us if we were invited. It will give us a clearer picture of what the expectations are there, so that when we do our work, we can also follow up and ensure that whatever was agreed on there and we are going to put in process is being implemented. Because to be honest with you, I don't know anything about it. My colleagues are saying the same thing. But anyway, that's the first thing. The Chair, there's so many issues, but I'm going to try to come with some and then give my colleagues, and then we'll come back to the other thing. You know, one of the major problems we find, Minister, the Chair, is the strategic plans don't really speak to the needs of the communities. What we have been finding as this committee specifically is that departments right from the ground, there's not much involvement of the communities. Provinces appear to be the culprits in terms of this ministry. That they come with these strategic plans because that's what they have to do to fill the box and say we've done our work. They probably, I think there's a norm now, what they're doing is just increasing it by 3% or 4% every year, coming up with these things, and you find that more often than not they're not able to implement. Whilst I must add that there's a lot of work being done on the ground. You gave us very, very valuable information, the artisans that you are using here and there. We don't know about it. Why? Why are you not advertising it? Why are you not telling us what you are doing? Because there's a perception out there in the country, nothing much is being done. But there's a lot being done in terms of what you're telling us. Why are you not telling us how many you took from the Tibet colleges, what did you take, whether you took plumbers, whether you took electricians, what did you take, what is your program, so that the country must know South Africa is also delivering. Don't only talk about the negative things that are happening in the country. That's so much of positive. But we're not hearing this. And let me add, Minister, most of the departments are doing the same thing. They're not telling the world all the good things that we are doing in the country. So the perception is there. We are just a corrupt nation with nothing more than that. But there you're giving me information. Now, I'm one of them, chairperson will agree, that has been complaining about the Tibet colleges. Because in my view, they are failing us with all the money that we are spending. But you are telling us how much of artisans that you are taking from these things. We don't know that. If you tell us these things and tell South Africa these things, we will know what's going on. So I just wanted to start on those things. I see that in terms of that MISA, we spent a hell of a lot of money there. And the idea there, I think, in spending this money is to ensure that these municipal infrastructure grants are spent. Whilst I acknowledge that you've done well in terms of your audit, the municipalities did not perform accordingly, to be honest with you. But the question that we must ask, and this is repeatedly happening, because we have many, many structures to oversee. Like the structure, then you got SCOPA, below that, monitoring, evaluation, internal audit, auditor general, everything. The question is, why are we putting in structure after structure after structure to get the people to do their work? 27.5% South Africans are unemployed. And I want to tell you, there is very little that we hear about consequences for these people who fail us year in and year out, who don't implement or fail to spend. You know, okay, we found some excuses for them. Some of them don't have capacity. How long are we going to talk about capacity? Because one of the things we find, I must be honest with you, Chair, through you, Minister, I'm demotivated from coming to this committee. Can I tell you why? We go there, we find a lot of good work being done, we find a lot of challenges. We come back here, and what do we do then? Nothing further happens. There's no consequences. So year in and year out, we're going there, we're seeing people performing, and I think Chair is going to, I'm going to come back to one of them that I said how I went and saw corruption alive in the Eastern Cape. It's 2 years, Chair, and I cannot get them to give us the information. It was alive. Maybe I'll explain one day what I mean by alive. But we saw it. Nothing is happening. So what happened? These people are taking us for granted that we will always be there. So they are lackluster. They will perform when they want to. They won't do that because when somebody didn't do his job, what are you supposed to do? He's supposed to appear before discipline. Why haven't you done that? You've got a plan. You've given it to us. We've given you the money. You have not done that. The other thing is that I find irregular expenditure seems to be exploited and abused at the local front especially. Because there's provision for you to regularize irregular expenditure, it seems to be abused. And in many instances, you'd find it is not necessary. They can go through the process. Some of them we find is not even urgent. But because there's a process, you can regularize, people are taking advantage of it on the ground. Now, one of my major concerns is money that we spent. And I always talk about, for me, the emphasis should not be on the spending itself. Because when you start forcing people to spend, they spend their money because they want to please you, we underspend. I'd rather you underspend the money than wasting the money. But when you spend the money, and you should be spending the money, you must make sure you must give us value for money. And that is not happening. You know, I know the previous CEO for supply chain has said this. we lose about 40% on goods and services, which comes to over 200 billion, and I've estimated at 200 billion, because we don't get value for money. Now, I want you to tell me whether, as COCTA, you have a process. Now, I don't know whether it's going to fall under your mandate. I've asked the supply chain and treasury to see that, but I don't know. Do we ever do some spot checks on maybe some of our departments, even at local level, just to see whether a pencil in Cape Town is costing the same price as in KwaZulu-Natal? I'm just giving you that as an example to see, because what you find is this, that when people are producing these documents, they are inflating the prices to such an extent, and that's why even Judge Mokgweng said, it's common knowledge that the state is a cash cow. When people deal with the state, instead of it being cheaper, it is inflated three times more. I want to know whether we've got a mechanism in place to be able to monitor these things. Now, you know, there's also a perception out there. Actually, to be honest with you, I've seen it happen. You know, when you talk about these tenders at the local level especially, 50 people go there to tender for the job. They go there, they spend a lot of money. They go back there, they put the documents on time. They go there on the day of the tender to be able to, you know, sign the attendance register. But the sad part of it is the job is already allocated to somebody. 49 of them wasted the time going there. So for me, the process doesn't start there. It starts in the budgeting process. From there it starts. The jobs are normally awarded before you even go there. And I've seen it happen in some of these areas. And maybe it's being reduced now. Maybe there's more emphasis now to try and cut it down. But it's still rampant in terms of the allocation. The other thing is the issue. We find that repeatedly in a lot of the government structures in the municipalities, political parties, no exception across the board, are appointing people that are affiliated to them rather than people that are competent. And I want you to tell us where you come in terms of this and what role is COCTA playing in ensuring that those people that are there are competent. In fact, maybe I would think that when you're dealing with officials of municipal managers and things, maybe it's something that should be taken away from the political side because it's being abused, and give more responsibilities to COCTA to be able to take that and interview people, make sure they're competent in, you know, that they're able to perform the job. Because I don't want to give you names, but I can tell you there are in municipalities, there are people who've never ever worked in that thing, but they're municipal managers today. Why? Because certain have taken over that municipality and they're going to do this and that. Because what is happening is that repeatedly you find, after every 5 years, if there's a change in the municipality, all those employees are gone and then there's new people. So the new political party that might come in brings in its own people, you understand, and that is exactly what, and that is why you find more corruption. And you and I know this. Political parties also survive, and I've said this under the political funding. The revenue is coming from there as well. So it's not about the people, it's not about the work that needs to be done. I think I've spoken to you about the issue of the TIVET and the community work programs, and I think you will give us that information. I find a major problem. Public representatives are not accountable to you. They're accountable to the political parties, and it's a serious problem. And I've said, even from members of parliament right to the ground, public representatives should be reporting to the people who pay for them. Because I can tell you now, even in parliament, we have members that come here on a Monday and they go back home on a Tuesday. They're not reporting, there's no work being done, but they're getting paid. Why? They report to their political parties, parties are protecting them. Now, I'll give you a good example. The NFP does not have any councillors in Itegwini because we did not contest the election. Do you know how difficult it is for me to find councillors that will even go and assist in giving these proof of address and addressing the challenges there? It's almost non-existent. I've tried it all, I promise you. People are complaining that on the ground they don't see us, councillors, and they don't see us. They see us 3 weeks before the election. So I want to know, what can you do to make sure that since you pay them, government is paying them, there must be able to be a mechanism, an accountability mechanism to your structure, COCTA, at whatever level, and to government themselves, rather than just to their allegiance to their political parties. So I want to go there. Chair, you want me to give my other colleague and come back, or you want me to continue?
Go on.
I must go. Okay. No. Now, Chair, we speak about procurement over 500,000, and it is clear that certain areas, certain structures have, or departments have, or municipalities may have violated this rule. I want us to be specific and tell us, as this committee, who are these people that are violating this, who are the repeat offenders, and what have you done about it? What were the consequences for these people that are violated, even though the rules are there, which is very, very loud and clear? Because if we don't, obviously nothing is actually going to happen. Now, my experience tells me, through you, Chair Minister, the MPACs, the Municipal Public Accounts, which is a beautiful structure, is toothless, and for that reason, they are pushed from one end to the other. Because councillors don't take them seriously in the different municipalities. Why? It is because all they can do is go there, identify the challenges, come back there, and it stops, like other appropriation, if nothing happens. And I have seen that myself because I've been part of the MPAC, and I can see that there is a serious problem. And many times they talk about it's not within your mandate. It's not within your mandate. It's not within your mandate. And my understanding is this, everything to do, they should be part of the mandate. Even the municipal manager should be accounting to the Municipal Public Accounts Committee. So maybe you need to look at that in terms of how do we strengthen the MPACs and their role and their understanding of what they really are supposed to be doing. There's another challenge in terms of the community work programs. And I can tell you I've picked that up in the Western Cape, where people are coming to me repeatedly and complaining to me. They are complaining to me that if they don't belong to a particular political party, they're not getting the work. And you know, when you try to address these things, people are saying, no, that is not the case. But in reality, the people are saying clearly, they are being told if you don't belong to a particular political party, no, we can't give you work. I mean, it's an initiative by government, it's an initiative by yourselves, why should it be who you belong to? I know this one might not really be part of you, but maybe if you could at some stage just give us a briefing on what is the latest development in Nelson Mandela Bay, what's actually happening there. We'd like to know. Now, we speak about that you spent 85% on this MIG projects and things that have been spent. 85. Now, what I find is, and just correct me if I'm wrong, I'm not a mathematician, but if we say 85% is spent, and if you overspent in certain departments, you know, in certain structures like compensation to employees or whatever it is, okay, would I be correct in saying that if you did not overspend in another program, you actually underspent more than 85%, or you underspent more than the required percentage here, because where you said you spent 85%, okay, on your budget, you had a certain underspending, but here you overspent by 105% there, 108% there, which means the underspending will be more because you should not have overspent in the other relevant programs. Is that, am I there? Is that okay? You know the point, I'm trying to get it. Are you there or not there? Okay, but if not, we'll come back to them. Now, I know we're talking about, there's a problem in terms of the internal audit. We're talking about it. And for me, that is a very, very important structure on the ground. With due respect to the Auditor General's office, my understanding is this. You tell the Auditor General what you want. If you're good in what you do, and you know how to manipulate the books. Now, I come specifically from the Indian community, to be honest with you, and we masters. We are masters in manipulating the books, let me admit. Okay, if you know how to manipulate the book, you will get unqualified audit every day if you have to do it. That's how good we are at it. Now, so for me, the internal audit is very... And I'll give you a good example. If I said I spent 50,000 rand on having a community activity, and I went and spent 50,000 rand on my wedding and got you on here, you're not going to know. That is why your internal audit process is not very, very important. So, for me, while I say that sometimes these audit reports are not really what the paper is written on, with no disrespect, the Auditor General performance is perfect. But they can't pick these things up because we tell them what they want. And like I already alluded to how good we are in what we do. Now, Chair, I'm going to give my colleague now and I'm going to come back to him. Well.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Thank you, Minister, and your officials for the presentation. I think, like my colleague here, I've got quite a lot of things, but I'll try and really use an approach of summarizing some of my concerns and perhaps some of my input. The first thing that I just would like to point out is that, you know, let me use an example of the audit finding. The key findings, yes, are indicated, and then you've got a column that speaks to the progress made. You know, for a person that doesn't know better, they would think that you are actually doing these things for the first time, because you've written everything that you are doing. It would be like it's never been done before, rather than it being really an issue of addressing that particular. I'll make an example. I just want to make an example of what I mean. Like, okay, let me take this one on the main, on the Okotale report, where it says the key finding was effective steps not taken to prevent irregular expenditure. Now you've come up with a whole lot of accurate information, true, but for a person that doesn't know better, you would think that now these people were not doing anything at all before that. They didn't have any standard operating procedures. They were not facilitating appropriate and effective internal controls. It's correct, but it's like you are only doing it as an intervention. You were not doing it before. So that is just my one concern, that, you know, you are putting measures rather than really addressing the issue of irregular expenditure, because now it's like you are saying we just didn't do anything correctly and nobody was doing it correctly, so we're putting all these things up, which I don't believe. I think you've been having this process in place. I hope you understand what I mean, that you did have the systems, but something did go wrong so that you incurred this irregular expenditure. So I'm just going to really not point out each and every issue that's been raised, that I wanted to raise, but really, really try to cut it short by summarizing it. Let me just check what I also noted here. When it comes to the underspending, again, here, with regard to underspending, there are certain things that just are matters of concern. If you say due to unforeseen factors like the last year's local government elections, the activities of the department, the 2016 procurement plan could not be implemented as planned. I mean, it raises more questions now. You want to know what does it mean? Why could it not be implemented because of the elections? Delays in receipt of complete and accurate invoices. You see, it leaves us with more questions of why was that the case. So this is just by way of pointing out, and the disaster relief, that because, I mean, it's a known fact that a disaster disasters will not always occur. Does this then mean that every time when there's no disaster you'll have this underspending? Because in a way one can interpret it that way. So I think I will leave the rest of individual questions and then maybe just go to the MISA presentation. I also have a few things that I just want to find out. The one thing here under the disclaimer opinion, according to the, and then you've actually indicated the areas of disclaimer, and I know you mentioned that this thing is under consideration. under consideration. I'm surprised that the Auditor General also can make such a big mistake. It would be very interesting to get the feedback on this particular area, because it's not just a qualified audit, but a really a disclaimer, and you are challenging that in terms of the regulation, as you've indicated. So perhaps if we can just get some more information on it. And then on slide number 5, in terms of the goods and services in particular, where there is underspending, and the reason for underspending is that the funds that we committed towards year-end and spending will be in 2017-18. Maybe if you can just explain that. I'm not too sure what it means when you say they were allocated or the committed late. And on slide 7, again, is the issue of the AG not completing their work. What reason do they give, perhaps, as to why they could not do that if they only had to complete their audit in December? Because they are the ones that are supposed to tell us to comply. So if the AG doesn't comply, then we really have a serious problem. Okay. Then one of the common things is the lack of capacity. Do you really lack capacity? Because then I know that it's not at the national department, but perhaps at the municipalities. The issue of capacity at municipalities is a serious issue, because I'm under the impression that people are getting trained and people that are working there should be having. How big is the issue of capacity at our municipalities then? Because if we don't have capacity, not just in numbers, but also in terms of quality of people that are working there. Just trying to jump. I really don't want to speak forever. There's just too many things. Okay. In terms of the mix, the effect under effectiveness on slide number 21, where you said 32 municipalities improved their spending on the MIG to at least 85%. Now, 32 out of how many? That I would be interested to know as to how many actually, if it's 32 that have. The other thing that I want to find out. In terms of the SMIC, the MISA grant that you have trained apprentices, but there are those that are the young learners who you are not able to place, and then you have those that you are able to place now. Training them is quite a noble initiative because they need the training. But is it, what are the criteria then for the people that you train, or is it cost effective to train them and then you are not even going to utilize them? While I'm saying also it is a noble idea to train them because they need to be employable. But do the criteria allow that you just train people even if you are not going to be utilizing for your work there? I will end there, Chair, for now. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Honorable Sinokonyana. Just on my part, I want to start off with the recommendations from the committee. It seems to me that the department, perhaps for reasons that could be explained, is quite slow in expediting responding to those recommendations. In the first instance, we had recommended responses within 60 days. And 9 months later, it's only now that we are getting these responses. And as we receive these responses, there doesn't seem to be finality on the matters, and it's not clear what time frames you have
placed on getting those issues resolved. To give an example, the issue of intergovernmental relations, it's a very important matter. It's an issue that we mentioned right at the beginning. We know that we said yourselves with other departments like National Treasury and so on should cooperate in expediting some of these issues. And obviously, the resolution of those issues is dependent on the cooperation as well from the other departments. We said you should work with. But it does not look like you yourself were eager to drive that these issues be resolved, these recommendations be attended to speedily and time frames be adhered to. If you could explain to us your difficulty in that. I've made an example of the intergovernmental relations issue. There are others as well, where you are simply saying we are in the process of doing this, but it's 9 months later. So that's where I would like us to start. The the other issues relate to for instance just broadly underspending. I think Honorable Snokanyana has raised that issue. Underspending on goods and services. You know, if you look at the grand total, 96.6, that looks good. But if you go to each item, that's where the problem is. And it means, for instance, there are two issues involved here. If you're underspending on goods and services, the first thing is that service delivery suffers. The second thing is that those who do business with government, especially SMMEs and cooperatives, are not benefiting, for instance, from the 30% set aside. That also would probably speak to the issue of payment within 30 days. You have said, you have given us what looks like a good figure, 90% paid within 30 days, but what about the other 10%, which could just as well be a number of SMEs whose business survival depends on payment within the specified period of time. The department itself at 76.6% spending, which is low. We need to check up on that as well. Perhaps if you could explain further why that, particularly on goods and services and so on. Now,
perhaps that links with the issue as well, which Honorable Snow Konyana raised about filling of vacant posts. Now, just explain to us, because if there are issues of underspending and there are posts that are not filled, it could just as well be that the posts that are not filled are actually critical posts which are funded. And because those critical funded posts are not filled, capacity then suffers. So explain to us the type of posts that are unfilled, whether they are not critical posts, they are critical posts or not, how many of them, and what is the cause of the delay in filling those if they are critical funded posts. We are aware of the cost containment measures with relation to post establishment and the filling of posts. But where critical posts that capacitate the department to perform, those have got to be, especially when they are funded. Now, slide 6, you talk to the issue of withholding the local government equitable share funds. The reason being some municipalities did not return their unspent funds. Is there no better mechanism to ensure that municipalities do retain their unspent funds rather than, you know, kind of yourselves becoming punitive by withholding their equitable share? And what effect does that have on their ability to deliver services if you withhold their equitable share? I'm saying that it must be possible for you to have communication lines open directly with the affected municipalities to say, first of all, where are the unspent funds? Show us in your books and in your balance sheet. So that you don't say these are unspent funds, but you can't put a finger onto the exact amount and where it is. And of course, point to the relevant legislation which says you are required to retain these funds. So, get the funds back to us. So that you are not then forced into retaliating and saying, because you are not, then we will withhold your funds. So that for us is a bit of is in fact a concern. And of course, indicate to us which are those affected municipalities that would have failed the legislation that compels them to return the unspent funds to yourselves.
Misa, you have spent 100% as Misa, and your job is to facilitate or capacitate the municipalities to perform financially, especially with specific programs, infrastructure being one of those. Does your 100% performance, which is good, translate to good performance of the municipalities for which you are responsible? From what we are reading, there is little correlationship between your 100% and the spending of municipalities whom you are supposed to assist. So, government gives you money to cause municipalities to spend. You spend that money, which you are supposed to use to cause municipalities to spend. But that does not relate to the outcome, the intended outcome. Explain that to us. The 23% spending on municipal systems improvement grant. That's part of the example I'm talking to. So that's very low, 23%. So these are some of the concerns that the committee has on the department and on MISA. We will come back to probe further. Let's just give you the opportunity to respond now.
Thank you very much, Chair, and let me also commend members for the question posed. Without any waste of time, I'm going to allow our team to respond, and then I will definitely come at the end of all the response, just to make sure that everything is covered. DG?
Thanks very much, Minister. The questions could be packaged as follows. There are questions that relate to the local government support. We have Mr. Fossey with respect to that, including issues that you've raised previously on intergovernmental relations, why we have not moved, and issues that relate to expenditure and procurement. The CFO will be able to deal with that, and there were issues of CWP, the acting DDG of CWP, We'll speak to that, and there were issues of incompetent people employed, and the acting DDG, institutional development, will deal with that. There were issues of planning, that were not planning, making any impact on the ground. I'll respond to that, and then if there are gaps, the head of planning, Mr. Malefi, can add if I've not covered it sufficiently. And I think the number of questions will be, and then MISA will also come in to deal with the questions that relate to them. I'll start with the strategic planning. That it doesn't speak to the needs of the people. To indicate, firstly, that in 2011, the National Planning Commission investigated challenges facing our country. They came up with certain things that informed the National Development Plan. Now, out of the National Development Plan, it was those issues were taken from there as outcomes. And our department, COCTA Ministry, is responsible for one of the outcomes, which is outcome 9. We are coordinating a number of things. We had one slide that was speaking to that. And these plans are tabled in Parliament after, we've finalized identifying, aligning, and making sure, and so forth. So there may not be a direct correlation between the outputs, and because the input, such as people that were appointed, the budget output, strategic plans, and the outcome and the impact thereof, there may not be that direct correlation because of various variances in between and so on. So I would say that we agree that sometimes, we may be dealing with certain things and missing certain things on the ground. But from time to time, through outreach programs at political level, they pick up those gaps, they feed back to... Now, there is an opportunity on the strategic plan. Annually, we review the annual performance plans, taking into account the parliamentary committee's inputs and the audit committee's inputs and various other stakeholders' inputs and so on. That way, I think it's how we can be able to improve this area of work. And I would also want to talk about the chairperson's points on the vacancies and the funded vacancies. Why are we not filling them urgently and so on? I wanted to indicate as follows that we had a number, we've identified a number of posts, about 50, as critical posts, and then 32 of them were filled, and 12 of them are in the final stages of being filled, and some of them were not filling them for the reasons that I'm going to explain, and a number of some of the key ones we've advertised more than once. For example, the DG's post of Department of Cooperative Governance, it has been advertised, I think, 3 times. And we have not been able to get a suitable candidate through all that process. And CWP was advertised, and I think how many times? Was it 3 times as well? And MISA was advertised as well. So, and there are some of the positions in Integrated Urban Development Framework. They were advertised. The first round, there were 4 or 5 of them, and we couldn't get suitable people in the process and so on. So there is a process that we're guided by the minister. The minister has directed us looking at the remaining 18 months of the current medium-term framework. And we have identified what we call quick wins, looking specifically in jacking up the monitoring and evaluation unit. And secondly, also issues of local economic development. The minister has raised that sharply. We are doing something about jacking that up. And also the area of supporting municipalities in terms of audits. We are also jacking that up, and we are putting special capacity with regard to that. And furthermore, we've talked about the MIG function, which is located in 2 places. We're pulling that together, and we regard this as a quick win. and which we're going. So we're not just filling the post going forward, and you know, I think we have 8 million that is remaining for now. The CFO will speak more on how the budget was cut in the medium term. But out of this 8 million, we are addressing areas that the minister has identified as core. You know, that position, I'm still going to also engage the minister with regard to that. So all those posts are going to be filled, but we also have the other process of finalizing other positions that need to be filled as well. And finally, there are those positions that will be discontinued so that we don't just fill the position, even if it is funded. If it is not addressing the priorities that the minister is saying we should focus on in the remainder of this term and so on, you know, we also try and look at how best do we make those trade-offs. And I'm going to ask Mr. Fossey to speak to a number of areas relating to local government support, including that issue of IGR and why we have taken this long. And after him, I'll ask Mr. Mutashuping. He'll also be speaking about issues of incompetence at local government level. And after Mr. Mutashuping, then I'll ask the CFO. And then lastly, I'll have Mr. C.T. Shaw, who is responsible for CWP, to also come in to deal with the issues relating to CWP.
Thanks, DG. And good morning to the honorable members. I'll respond to about five questions. The first one, it's on the issue of whether do we have mechanisms to monitor the value of the money spent. I'll relate this to the MIG funds. I know the honorable member made an example of the PENS, but in relation to the MIG, we are responsible for dispersing a 15 billion grant for infrastructure. And the approach that, Chair, we were looking at is to look at the whole value chain. So we start in terms of the disbursement. We monitor the expenditure. We also, working with MISA, assess the value and the quality of the project, infrastructure projects, in terms of the relationship between the expenditure and what is actually delivered on the ground. In addition to that, we also provide support, which the MISA presentation alluded to. In extreme cases, we also intervene where there are challenges. And that's the approach, Chair, that we're using in terms of ensuring that we ensure there's value for the money that we spend in relation to infrastructure delivery. The other question was a question relating to the impacts that are toothless. We agree with the honorable member. This is an issue which we've identified because the challenge was that the impacts did not have any legislative authority. And in the current amendment that we're working on in the Structures Act, we're actually giving now and confirming the role of the impacts and giving them clear role and status in terms of their responsibilities and how, in the context of the structures of councils, how they relate to that. The other question is the latest on Nelson Mandela. As the honourable member would be aware, this happened yesterday in the council, the removal of the deputy mayor. We are monitoring with concern, Chair, the developments in Nelson Mandela. Our teams are interacting with the municipal manager at that level, but we're also aware that the political parties involved are also engaging on this issue. So from the department side, we'll monitor this process as it unfolds. The The other question, Chair, is the slow process in responding to the recommendations that were made by the committee, and in particular the issue that the chairperson raised and on the reviewing the IGR. As a department, Chair, we did a comprehensive policy review of the system of provincial and local government, which looked at basically the three spheres, national government role in the provincial role and municipal. And then the recommendations of that policy review was then taken forward through the processes of the governing party. And the chair would appreciate that the issue of IGR is not just a COCTA matter. It is a policy issue in terms of reviewing the functionality of the system as a whole. We are in the engaging in those processes of how we strengthen this issue. And the point that we've made in the presentation, we are looking at the issue of reviewing the province's role, mandate of provinces as directed by some of the processes outside of which the minister can speak to. That process, Chair, of looking at the provinces, it will require that we look at the system as a whole, because the role of provinces in relation to national government and to municipalities, the use of powers and function, and the whole IGR fiscal relations system, all those matters will be addressed as part of those processes. So it's a process that will not be concluded within the period. But I think what we'll need to do, Chair, to ensure that we keep the committee abreast of all of those developments. The last question, Chair, it's a question that you've raised around the issue of withholding of funds against the equitable share. This is a matter, Chair, that we continue to engage with. The challenge is that some of the monies that are not returned is because it's monies that have been spent on other issues. So for example, in many cases, your MIG grants would then be used for operations. And the only mechanism in terms of DORA currently is to ensure then that we would offset that from the equitable share. But we take note of the point that the chair is raising, that we don't want to disadvantage the communities in terms of the services that they were meant to receive. So one of the measures that we're putting in place now is to look at the conversion of the funds, MIG funds, where at national level, where the municipality is not able to spend or doesn't have the capacity, we will be managing that at national level on the behalf of that municipality to ensure that the communities affected are able to benefit from those resources that were meant for infrastructure development in their areas. But the issue of withholding, stopping and reallocation, Chair, is also one of the measures that we need to continue to ensure that we also promote good governance and good conduct in terms of spending at municipal level. Thanks.
Thanks, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, Minister. I will respond on two issues, one in relation to the appointment of senior managers and competent staff members in municipalities, and the second one will be in relation to capacity building in municipalities. Chairperson, the Municipal Systems Act and the regulation gives us the regime that we need to utilize to see to it that competent staff members are employed. What the department has done in response to that was to establish what we call a quarterly forum, where provinces are required to make a presentation every quarter on progress made on the appointment of senior managers in municipalities. We can say with certainty now that since July 2014,
after the promulgation of the regulations on the appointment of senior managers, that we are monitoring on a day-to-day basis the process of recruitment of senior members in municipalities. In instances where municipalities are not reporting, as required by law, within 14 days, we take steps to ensure that municipalities report to MECs and MECs subsequently report to the minister. We have taken steps in all provinces where we have identified that municipalities did not appoint suitably qualified personnel. We have taken steps to inform those municipalities through the MECs responsible for local government in provinces that they take corrective steps to nullify such appointments. We have done that in all provinces. And in instances where municipalities disregard the directive of the minister to take corrective measures to nullify such appointments, we have, together with MECs, went to court where we have applied for what we call a declaratory order to nullify those appointments. We've done that in the Northwest, we've done that in the in KZN, we've done that recently in the Western Cape. Issues that relate to competencies. What we have done in 2014 when we promulgated the regulations, we have developed competencies for all critical positions in municipalities. And we have also partnered with LG CETA together with National Treasury to see to it that those competencies are relevant to those disciplines in the four or five critical positions in municipalities. So we can certainly say that since 2014, it is very difficult for municipalities to appoint incompetent senior managers in municipalities. We are monitoring this from the stage of the adverts, making sure that the advert is in compliance with the regulations. We also monitoring the establishment of the panels that should be in compliance with the regulations so that there should not be political bias when such appointments are made. So on a day-to-day basis, we are monitoring this. In instances, like I've already indicated, instances where municipalities are not doing the right thing, we are taking appropriate steps in to that being implemented. We are also finalizing, as the minister said previously, promulgating or developing competencies for all staff members below senior managers. So toward the end of this month, the minister will be promulgating regulations in relation to competencies for all staff members up to the lowest level. So in instances after the promulgation of the regulations, we'll continue again to ensure that we monitor the appointment of all staff members below Section 56 in compliance with the regulations that we are going to promulgate this month. Going to the second point that relates to capacity building, COCTA has taken a decision that we are now going to coordinate all capacity building initiatives in the sector. What we did was to call all stakeholders and all capacity building service providers in the sector, and we are meeting on a monthly basis to see to it that there is no unnecessary duplication in relation to capacity building initiatives in the sector, both at the administrative level and both at the political level. That we have established, like I've already indicated, we have developed sector-specific batteries in relation to how we are going to determine the competencies of those senior managers employed in municipalities. And we have made the point that only accredited service providers will then be conducting capacity building in the sector. Now, from now onwards, we've already met twice with all sectors. We've met with LG CETA, with SALGA, and we've agreed that no accredited service provider will be allowed in the sector, and that we are going to quantify the numbers in relation to capacity building initiatives and the quality thereof. We have taken a different approach, that we are not only to look at numbers, but we are going to look at the impact of capacity building initiatives, and we'll be reporting to Cabinet and Parliament in relation to the value that is added in relation to this particular initiative that we have taken of capacitating senior managers. We have also agreed in principle that the induction process of municipal councillors will not only stand at the level of induction, but will continue into the next two, three phases in how we are going to enhance the capacity of public representatives in municipalities to see to it that they carry out their constitutional mandate. So those are the areas that the department has embarked on in seeing to it that we professionalize what we call local government administration. Firstly, by making sure that the minimum norms and standards in relation to competencies and qualifications of senior managers who enter the sector, those who are already in the sector and do not have those competencies, we have made provision for training with together with National Treasury for a period of 18 months once they're in the sector, and also to have an ongoing training. But that will be spearheaded and coordinated specifically by National COPTA. That's the response to the two questions.
And I'm going to ask the CFO to deal with the procurement-related and financial-related, and after that, Mr. Sitisho, CWP.
Good morning, Honourable Members, Minister, colleagues. With regard to the feedback, I will start with the compensation of employees. Just to indicate the under expenditure there, I think the DG has already spoken about the filling of vacant posts. As part of the 2016 MTF process, Cabinet has decreased the compensation of employees' ceilings for all departments. That resulted in a situation where specifically our department cannot fill, we will have savings in the first year because of the cuts. The main cut was in 2018-19 with a 51 million. So that means we will have savings in 16-17, 17-18 to an extent that we can't fill additional posts over and above those that the DG has indicated. So we need to try and see that we stay with appointments within the ceiling, specifically the outer years, that we don't sit with a situation that we cannot afford permanent employees. Where possible, we are using contract people, but within the ceilings. Back to goods and services, the underspending there, partly it relates to correctly indicated with regard to the payment of invoices. However, it also relates to the implementation of the procurement plan, as we've indicated in the presentation. Because of the number of actions after and before and after the local government elections, we could not fast-track the implementation of administrative processes. A number of administrative processes are required before a tender can be issued. We could not fast-track that, and that also resulted in some of the projects, amongst other, the Municipal Systems Improvement Grant, which is an indirect grant on the books of the department. We could not fast-track those projects the way we wanted, but it is now, it has been awarded and it's implemented, and we've provided for that. Just with regard to the violating of SCM processes, specifically the one of 500,000 that we haven't followed the processes, Chairperson, that mainly related to our community development implementing agents. They are doing procurement for community works program, tools and materials on behalf of the department, and in some cases they have not followed the correct procedures. However, what the department have done, we have put processes in place, they've been trained, and we are continuously monitoring and ensure that they are doing that. Perhaps just a reflection on the audit findings. We appreciate the comment. I think it's basically we are in the final processes of strengthening the SOPs. Look at our turnaround time, specifically also related to the 30-day payments, because that 10% is still for us also a concern, Chairperson. Thank you very much. I hope I've addressed all.
Is there anyone? Are you done? Not yet. Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson, and the members of the committee, Minister, Chairperson of the Audit Committee. The question that I have to deal with is only one in relation to the appointment of politically connected or affiliated participants within the CWP program. We have been made aware, Chairperson, with regard to such practices more especially where you've got this homogeneous political dominance of one political party, in the essence of the question of the member that has been asked, is correct and it's being investigated. Chairperson, we need to highlight the fact that the noble intention of assembling stakeholders to avoid partisan and subjectivity in the appointment process of participants within CWP has also compromised, because you might find one local recruitment committee comprising of about 15 different stakeholders from churches to NGOs within a specific area. And if one political party is in dominance in terms of the question that the member has asked, you would realize that we have what we call double, triple dipping and quadruple dipping of some individuals being participants in the CWP program. They are also members of the policing forum. They're in all sorts of forums which are government related in a specific area. And as a result, they become very dominant in the appointment and also in the choice of projects that are supposed to take place in that area. That is the difficulty about over-democratizing the process of community work program. But we have made note of that. We are taking steps. We have actually issued a circular from our offices to indicate that it could not be correct that one person is a member of the community work program and they are the chairperson of the ward committee. They are also the chairperson of the community work policing forum. They are in the school governing committee. They dominate almost everything, and as a result, they make the choices of who goes into these particular committees. We will be making recommendations to the minister going into the next phase by March next year to amend the protocols in relation to the participation of some of the participants. Thank you, Chair.
We have got Mr. Chair and...
Before that, okay. You know this issue of appointments of the so-called politically connected, the dominance of one political party over the others, and so on, which links to the issue that is often raised as well, the so-called cadre deployment. These are matters that we must look at very closely. I'm tempted, therefore, to just raise this particular point. Whether in the appointment of CWPs, the standard qualification that you look into, that qualifies that person to be employed. Whether now that the issues are being raised of being committed to other structures as well, whether there is a mechanism through which these CWPs declare their other interests. Does legislation disqualify, or whatever regulation or piece of legislation that regulates the appointment of CWPs disqualifies someone who applies for this particular activity, but is also committed to other structures in the community? These are things that you've got to look into. Is there a method of assessing the work of the community, the CWPs? So that you satisfy yourself that you have appointed capable persons. So that you remove this cloud, it's getting spoken over and over and over and over again, sometimes unnecessarily so. At one point, you hear this argument of the so-called cater deployment, condemned, blah, 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 and so on and so on. The very organization that pronounces this condemnation gets into power and does the same thing. So the department must have a system that allows them to recruit people who qualify, a system that allows you to allow that person who applies to declare his other interests and check whether legislation prevents such a person from being employed in the first instance in the position that is applying for, and of course assess the performance. And I'm saying this not only to this particular department. I'm saying this in general, because if we continue to hear these allegations over and over again, which come through in different languages, we will end up with dysfunctional structures of government. Because we want to say, no, we have employed neutral persons. There is no neutral person. Politically or otherwise, there is not a single neutral person. Because the very person you say should be neutral, come election time, whether local government or national election, are you going to say to this person, because you are employed, declare who you are, or who you are voting for, and then violate this person's rights? You see? Everybody has a right to the job, to the available jobs, in the public or private sector. Are you going to violate the right of this person to access this job because he belongs to a particular political party or does not belong anywhere and to any political party? If this person does not have a political affiliation at all, how do you determine that this person, non-affiliation qualifies this person as being neutral? How do you know that? So it's these things, honorable members, that we must deal with. And I'm not saying to the department, I'm saying ourselves must begin to think through these issues. And of course, where there are clear, undeniable acts of improper appointment, we are acting within our rights as public representatives to say so, and state organs to investigate that and correct it if it needs to be corrected. But if we make these blanket statements, unsubstantiated statements, accusations and counter-accusations, and then we don't present to the structures of government, whether municipalities or provincial governments or national government or entities, and we don't present factual information about our allegations, then we are not helping the situation. I thought I should make this remark before you proceed with the rest of your responses. Please go ahead.
MESA, and then Honorable Chair, the chairperson of the Audit Committee, because he plays an oversight role, as they played that role as Audit Committee. He will also make remarks after MESA, before the Minister comes.
Thank you very much, Titi. Thank you very much, Chair. The issue of not communicating the good work that we do, it's an issue that even our minister, I'm sure we'll talk to it, has raised it on a number of occasions, and it's a matter that we are looking at. At MESA, we have not been having communications unit in the new structure. We have now a communications unit, and it's an area that we will make sure that it is prioritized, because indeed there is a lot, you know, Chair, that we are doing that is not communicated to the people out there. And on the issue of AG, what are the issues relating to the disclaimer opinion and irregular expenditure? On the disclaimer opinion, the issue is we provided AG with audit files, and we picked up later, you know, when we engaged with them, that there are files that they omitted to audit. As a result, they came up with the finding of a disclaimer opinion based on the reliability of information that they had on other information and so forth and so forth. So it's an area that they themselves have considered that, yes, this file and this one, we did not look at it, give it back to us. We'll then look at it and come back to you. So we're expecting a response next week on that one. On the irregular expenditure, it relates to prior year transactions where the then accounting officers, there was accounting officer then, and then there was another one, Dr. Sean Phillips, they approved submissions to advertise for a shorter period of time instead of 21 days. Of course, for reasons that were then provided in the submissions, which the then accounting officers felt they were valid reasons. But AG, when they go through the submissions, they are saying, no, this is due to poor planning. It's not a valid reason to deviate. Of course, we are contesting that because some of these transactions are actions that are not within our control. I'll make an example of one transaction where, in terms of the regulations, you must advertise through tender bulletin, and you must place an advert with the government printing works at least 7 days before. Then we placed this advert with the government printer with printing works. Then later we realized that they've been rejected. And this happens not once. And we realized that there was a new system that was being introduced by government printing works, where you don't communicate with an individual, you just communicate through the system. And they keep on rejecting. And we had targets in terms of meeting our APP targets. Then there was a motivation to say, using Regulation 16A 6.3, let's request for the accounting officer to approve that we advertise for a shorter period of time after we received an approval from the government printing works. And that was approved. And then for us, we thought that was a valid reason, you know, because had we not do that, we would not have met even our APP targets. But AG, of course, is debating. We're having a meeting on that particular issue with National Treasurer on Monday, and they will take a decision. Of course, there were others as well, two transactions, which again relate to issues beyond our control, where there was a decision, for instance, on one on the issue of packet eradication, where MESA was appointed as an implementing agent. And the agreement with the Department of Human Settlement, Provincial Department of Human Settlement, Northern Cape, was only signed in February, and we expected to make sure that in terms of the program, we complete, you know, the package in Northern Cape by June 2014, and we only had an agreement signed in February. And we felt then there was a reason, you know, those were reasons enough to request that you advertise for a shorter period of time so that we are able to meet the targets set, you know, by the cabinet. But of course they are saying, no, it's not a valid reason. But we are arguing that is valid because even the regulation itself doesn't define what will be considered valid, you know. It's as the accounting officer may determine if it's an urgent matter. And then coming to the issue that the chairperson raised of the correlation of MISA spending and the performance of municipalities that MISA is supporting. Our spending was not 100%, it was 85%. So I want to correct that. But on the issue of correlation, chairperson, it's an issue that we debated on a number of occasions ourselves to see the manner in which we support municipalities. If we just deploy engineers, of course, the only thing they know is a technical, you know, area. They will go and deal with issues of ensuring that projects are properly planned, they are in line with the design requirements, and project management. But there is an area which is very key, the issue around finance management issues, the issue around supply chain, the issue around governance. Now, these are issues that we said, irrespective of how capacitated MISA could have, including our engineers, those issues are beyond their own capacity. Hence, we then, chairperson, did what we call the refocusing of MISA in 2015, where we came up with a number of initiatives which seeks to address some of the systemic and structural challenges which then impact on the performance of infrastructure in municipalities. One such program is the one, chairperson, that we presented as a pilot, the Regional Management Support Program, which is a total turnaround program focusing on the water function. But we say, let's not just focus on the technical part of the water function. Let's deal with the whole value chain relating to the water, including the issue of improving financial management, revenue, including the issue of project management, HR, and supply chain. So we have deployed experts, chairperson, in municipalities, about eight plus middle management experts. We've got CAs that we have appointed, which we have deployed in these municipalities to assist to deal with the issue of financial management and the whole PTO. We've got procurement specialists that we have appointed. We've got water engineers who are experts in the water that we have appointed, who are not just technical, but who deal with the strategic nature of the function, water. We have appointed project managers. We have appointed human resource specialists through this program. So it's a combination of all these specialists to say, let's not just deal with one issue, let's deal with the overall value chain. And then from there, the results, I'm sure, they will share with this committee in terms of to what extent this turnaround, you know, will improve the situation. But when we initiated the program, we wanted to deal with all, to focus on all the 27 priority districts with our water services. However, National Treasurer said, no, we are giving you 80 million rand to test this for 2 years in one region. Then we were going to focus on one region, but we said, let's spread it in two. So we were focusing on Eastern Cape, OR Tambo and Amatole as one region, and Sekhukhune in Limpopo. So we'll share with this committee. So it's part of the initiative that we came up with, chairperson, to try and say, let's not focus just on the technical part of work, but the overall value chain. And also, over and above that, we have initiated a program that is seeking to assist municipalities around the issue of procurement. We're putting in place a framework contracts so that municipalities, instead of having to go out on tender to procure goods and services which are repetitive in nature, like your transformers and so forth, we must have a framework contracts that will be nationally monitored, where municipalities will just place orders against those framework contracts. So it's part of the efforts to improve the performance of municipalities, in particular around acceleration of infrastructure procurement. And then the issue around the placement, the challenges that we're having around placement of our artisans and, in municipalities and other learners. The question was, what is the problem? Why we are not? Is this cost effective if municipalities will not absorb? When you go through the report, Chairperson, you will see that there is achievement. That we did not meet the target, but a number of these learners have been absorbed. But there are those that have not been absorbed, and we have made a point that municipalities, they, in the main, more interested on the qualified ones, the graduates that have already qualified. Those ones, all of them have been absorbed, even more. But the ones that are still learning, they don't really, they are not interested much. But we have engaged with them, we have ongoing engagement with municipalities, including our partner SALGA with them. Now, on the target now, we have already placed all those that were targeted to place, though we did not place them within the 2016 financial year, all of them. But all of them were placed now in April. So the program itself, there is a need, as we know in the country, the issue of technical skills is a serious challenge. And at some point we presented to the committee here when we came to present our annual report to say we wanted to relook into the issue of MISA training learners and artisans, whether can we leave this to Department of Higher Education through CITAS and so forth to do. But the committee felt that we can't. There is a need for these skills, we need more, institutions to contribute towards production of artisans and so forth. So we decided to say we're not going to drop that initiative. We'll continue doing it, and also at the same time address the issue of placement. I think I've attended to all the issues. The 32 municipalities, out of how many? In our plan, we had planned to support 40. So overall, including other initiatives, not just infrastructure of MIG, we have supported 89 in total. But with regard to the MIG issues, we have supported 40. But 32 out of those have improved in terms of spending above 85%. But also, if you look into the national picture, you will see that we have an average spending of 92% on all nationally. So which means the issue of spending per se is not really a challenge, in many municipalities in the country. But the issue is the quality of that spend. That's what we are grappling with. Hence, the harmonization of the functions, the MIG function from the department and MISA. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honorable Minister. Chair, we are a parallel oversight committee to yourselves. We are independent from the activities of the department. We are established in terms of the provisions of the Public Finance Management Act. What I can say, Chair, is to say, in collaboration to some of the statements made by the department, the work that they present, be it performance or audited financial statements, is part of the work that we do quality review before it is passed over to your good selves in the strengthening of monitoring and supporting the executive authority, because it's not in the day-to-day operation of the administration. Part of the issues which the DG has indicated on strategic plans, which your APPs, indeed, to the extent that you see where they say they have not achieved it, is because before it's brought to your sense, we scrutinize and make sure that the portfolio of evidence that is put before whether AG or yourselves must be realistic to an extent that it will be linked to what they are supposed to achieve. And in that regard, we have been gradually moving to an extent where the APPs needs to conform to the monitoring and performance management guidelines, which says it must be smart, it must be specific, so that anybody who reads it must be able to see where it is going, what it's going to achieve. It must be measurable, it must be accurate, and also, again, it must be realistic and time-bound. So the department is moving towards that direction through also our support in that regard. There was mentioned, Chair, that you can tell an auditor to give you whatever you do. However, in the public sector, the process of auditing is a little bit complicated to an extent that there are many facets or check and balances that ensures that the outcome that the members will receive as the final annual report or audit financial statement truly reflect what the department is doing, because there are a number of internal controls that are put in place to ensure that the product that comes out is credible. I know as a business person in my business, the auditors will come and ask me a question, I give you, they become satisfied, but not in the public sector, because the departments need to comply with certain rules and regulations, which that is the reason why you hear MISA saying that they have lodged a complaint, because they have given a reason of what they have done, but the AG says, I'm looking at it from this particular angle. If it was in the private sector, it would have not been an issue. But in the public sector, I can assure our honorable members that there are check and balances that ensure that the product that you receive at the end of the day is closer to reality. So I wanted just to indicate, Chair, that we are a parallel structure that also enhances your work on quality assurance to ensure that the department does what it promised the nation in terms of the APPs, and also to make sure that the finances that you have appropriated are indeed spent in the way that they're supposed to be. I just wanted to make that remark, Chair.
Chair, maybe before I respond, yes, goes off the table. If you could comment perhaps a little more specifically on the areas where you are strong, just in terms of risk management and governance. And indicate to us, here we are satisfied, we are doing well. And those areas where you think there are still some weaknesses which need to be attended to on the same aspects. Perhaps comment as well on the effectiveness and accuracy of your the overall budgeting and spending and so on. So that we have an idea of what areas of strength and what areas of weakness you are identifying, that will help also our own recommendations to Parliament as to how further the department can be assisted and yourselves as the audit committee would be assisted.
the first thing, the issue of budgeting is an internal process that is done by the DG and his top management. We come after to monitor after the budget has been concluded. However, what we have realized, and as the DG has indicated and the CFO, the department is hamstrung in terms of capacity because of what the CFO has indicated, that in the outer year, the budget is showing some shrinkage. That is the reason why they cannot appoint people now, which will result in the saving that we were discussing. Because if they appoint these people to be permanent, in the outer years of the MTF period, these people will not be able to be paid because the budget will have shrunk. So that is one of the issues that the DG and the minister are indicating to the honorable members here, that is the effect which says now it will look like there's a saving. It's not a saving because in the outer year, if you implement it now, you won't be able to pay people in the outer years. With regards to issue of risk management, we as the committee, we are satisfied that the unit within the department is doing a proper job. We have been able to assist the department to link what we call the performance of non-financials to the risk applications, where what the department is doing in terms of monitoring their risks and identification thereof, it links to what they are doing on the performance on the other side. The work that we do, we cover in all other issues, financials and non-financials, to an extent that we have come up with a plan together with the department. They've developed a schedule called integrated monitoring plan, which includes your work. We also forced them to say that now, what are those resolutions that are coming from the portfolio committee, which they need to put to the plan so that we can monitor that indeed the concerns that you raise, that you are taking too long to respond on certain things, although the department has indicated that some of the things are not in their hands. We also ask them those questions to say there are these resolutions from the portfolio committee who don't see actions, and then they would bring proof to say we are not just dragging our feet. It is because it's a multilateral committee that needs to be established and do other things, just to make sure that what you resolved here does not fall into the cracks. We put it into that IMT to make sure that we monitor that. We also look into the ICT support of the department to say, do they have systems that are supporting them? One of the issues that the DG indicated is around what we were talking about, CWP. Day before yesterday, we had a meeting where we were interrogating that particular system to look into and say, is this system indeed supporting that unit of CWP the way it should? To an extent that the DG, after our meeting, they are putting a plan, because one of the issues that was discovered is that this was a system that was given to us by a certain person who is a middleman. Now, this middleman gets the source code from India. And each time when we have got a problem because issues are developing, then does not have answers. You must first go to India to get solutions and come back. And that delays the work of the department because they need an answer now. So they have now developed a plan to say, how do we deal with this? We need to pass this middleman and go to the owners of the system and see if ever they cannot help us in that regard. So these are some of the issues that we are supporting the department in achieving, Chair.
Mr. You know, one of the issues I'm reminded now that he talks about the middlemen. One of the issues that this committee has been worried about, and maybe you want to comment when you come in on this, is the extent to which departments are engaged with too many agents along the way. The middleman, as he's called it. And in the process, a lot of money gets spent with these many agents that the departments are committing. And resources which otherwise would have augmented the work you do in delivering services gets taken up by these many middle persons, agents, if you like. So that's one of the things that this committee has been worried about, and we are beginning to say, is it not possible for departments to go direct most of the time, so that you have as few middle persons as possible, or as few agents as is possible? You only engage those that you really cannot do without to perform your task to the optimum. So we would like to even if you don't respond to that now, Honorable Minister, we're throwing that to yourselves, and we're saying have a look at where the leakages may be, which may not necessarily be necessary, leakages that may be really closed up, shut down in the cause of your spending, and then redirect those recouped funds back into the real nuts and bolts of service delivery. Over to you, Minister.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Maybe I should reassign some few questions that I feel were not responded to. The first question being the one on the AG not completing their work on time. I think there was a specific question as to why. And the second question being how disaster relate to under expenditure. I think it is very important, CFO, to give that narration. But also the third one, how elections impeded implementation of certain targets. So I think it should be responded to. And the 30 days payment provision, I mean the 10% that is outstanding, I think the chairperson asked that question. Let's entertain it. And lastly, I think the invitation, DG, I thought you would start with that one. Honourable Member indicated that he was not invited to the summit. And I should also take this opportunity to indicate maybe it happened in the new quarter, I think we also had not only this summit, but there was also a local government in Durban. But I think that will be reported to in our next report. But I think it's important that let's just clarify those things before I give my overall comment.
Thanks, Minister. Thanks for reminding us about that question. What happened is AG, they are using outsourced services to assist with the auditing that they do for departments. It's the same with MISAM. They outsource the service to EY.
Ernst & Young.
Ernst & Young. Yes, Ernst & Young. And Ernst & Young, they did the audit, and from their side, they thought they have completed the audit on time, to the end of August. And AG, upon review, they felt that there were gaps in the manner in which the audit was done by EY, and then they started the audit afresh. They replaced some of the auditors who were doing the audit for MISA and brought in new team, both from AG and Ernst & Young. And that then prolonged the completion of the audit. But they requested extension from Parliament to complete the audit by December. And they completed by December.
Chairperson, in addition, it's what also precipitated the issue of re-auditing was that they had a preliminary report which was saying that MISA was qualified on three items. Part of the work that we do is also to review the outcomes of the Auditor Generals before they finalize. When they brought their preliminary report to the Audit Committee with those three qualifying items, we looked into them and we found out they were not qualifying items. That is one of the issues that has made now the AG to go back and says, let's redo the work to make sure that they give the correct outcome.
On the invitation, this is after one.
The invitation, we have invited the select committee that is responsible for COCTA and the COCTA portfolio committee, because they deal with our mandate and so on. And we didn't invite all the in future, perhaps we'll have to review that. I'm going to ask Ms. Mabidilala to speak to the disaster issue.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, Minister, and colleagues. In terms of the allocation of the disaster grants, there's two grants that are given to the disaster management. The one is an immediate grant, which is meant to respond immediately when a disaster happens. And the framework for that grant is agreed upon between us and the provinces. In terms of the Disaster Management Act, we only as national come in if the province has exhausted its resources. And most of the time you'll find that the province has allocations for those immediate disasters. As a result of that, then the money is not spent. But also the grant is dependent on if disasters are occurring or not. And in that case, if the money has not, the funds has not been spent, it does not necessarily mean that we do not get the same grant the following year. It goes back to National Treasury and it's reallocated to wait for the time when there are disasters that have been declared. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, I'm going to ask the CFO to deal with the 30-day payment and the delay due to elections.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, Honourable Members, Minister, colleagues. I think just to add with regard to the presentation and the discussion, I think currently our major delay, that 10%, is based on the fact that our biggest service providers currently is our CWP implementing agents that we reimburse, as well as our travel services. And some of the delays, amongst other, include the fact that the turnaround times to get those invoices is bulk invoices, to verify that and ensure that the calculations are correct, as well as the source documents are correct. Further, that is for both those big entities. We have a plan in place to try and see how we can deal with the time frames. It's the turnaround times, because the volumes of the invoices are enormous in many cases. So we have got an action plan in place, and we hope to see some improvements on that. We also had, in the beginning of this financial year, there were changes over from one financial system version to another. It also impacted, but we are dealing the best we can, and we acknowledge that that 10% is still not acceptable, and we hope to see that to try and put even temporary capacity to try and deal with these bulk invoices for verification, because if we don't do a thorough job on that, it will come back to us in the audit process. So that is currently our major thing. We also had a bit of trouble, technical problems with regard to bank verifications, where we receive banking information. It needs to go into the financial system. It's technicalities, but it has an impact on the turnaround times of those. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
And Chairperson, the one for elections, the reason there, that due to local government elections, there are some of the issues that impact on local government, and resolutions have got to be taken by councils and so on. So, you know, when the new councillors came in and so on, we had to reprioritize, we had to also engage the new leaders that were coming in, and it, to some extent, impacted on the procurement process. But that was not the major issue in terms of the percentage of how much impact with regard to that. It may not be that significant.
All right. Chair, very quickly from my side, I think there are some few anomalies that one should acknowledge, firstly, that were picked up this evening.
Due respect. There's some of my questions not answered. Will that come after the minister's response, or should it be before that? Because I think the minister wants to round up and give us... A whole lot, Chair. First, I think one of the things I wanted to know from Mr. What can we do to ensure there's greater accountability from public representatives, councillors, and things on the ground, because there appears to be a major gap between them and the people on the ground, and that's why we have these protests and all kinds of things. That's one. The second thing, okay.
I was thinking maybe I should respond, and then if there's something
okay.
that is not covered, then remember.
Okay.
But also, I think the CFO of MIS, I wanted to respond first before I come in.
Okay.
Thank you, Honourable Minister. Good afternoon to the Honourable Members. There was a question that was raised in relation to the 85% underspending on MISA, that taking consideration the overspending in SOE, the underspending in SOE and overspending in some areas under goods and services, would that make any difference? The response is actually no. The 85% remains because we've actually taken into consideration the differences, so the consolidated amount. So there won't be any change in that 85%.
Can I just give clarity on, I think I'm actually misunderstood there. What I'm saying is this, and I'll give you a good example because I've actually broken it down to make it a lot easier. If you've got five programs and you've got 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, and each four of them spend 15%, so they did not spend 5% each. The last one spent 25%. The average will come to 20. That's what I'm trying to say now. When you're doing an overall, generally you're showing you've only underspent by 15%, which is 85% you spend. But technically, if you live, you should not be overspending in other programs. Overspending in another program should not dictate what happened in the other four programs. So if you look at it, generally speaking, you've underspent by 80%, I mean by 20% rather than by 15%. Do you understand me there?
I understand you, Honourable Member. Unfortunately, we are guided by National Treasury guidelines that when we are accounting, we have to comply. Hence, we have produced such a report. Just to touch on the main reason for underspending, the acting CEO has touched on the piloting program of RMSC, which is the Regional Management Support Program in municipalities that we are piloting. So the underspending under MSTS of 30.5 million is that ring fence amount that caused the main underspending, of which we have actually written to National Treasury requesting to retain that funding, because we have actually awarded later on in the financial year those tenders. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, let me start by two areas that I refer to as anomalies. We will expect a ministry like COCTA to be a champion of communication because it deals with communities. But what we have established is that the issue of communication within COCTA and, of course, within MISA as an agent of COCTA were never prioritized before. So communication has been an issue, and as a result, that has been addressed, hence in terms of prioritization of a new post and task, communication is enjoying our attention. But linked to that too, you will expect a ministry like COCTA at least to be heavy capacity to support municipalities on financial management issues. Now, what is interesting is that at some stage there was a unit that was meant for such, more especially focusing or guided by the outcome of the AG's report. That unit was collapsed. And as a result, there has been that particular vacuum. Now, the posts that, among other things, the posts that have been prioritized are trying to address these two areas because to us they are of a concern. We can't wait, as an example, for National Treasury to give an advice to COCTA on issues as picked up by the AG, while COCTA is expected to be directly giving response to those issues. So it doesn't gel well, but also it undermines, I mean, the realization of our own mandate as a minister. So those two areas are being entertained. And the provision that the DG is referring to, in as far as appointment of new appointments or prioritized appointments, will also deal with those two areas. And I think the issue of the AG and how doable it is for someone to cook the books, no. You know, our system is a very credible one. I mean, the AG's office, I can tell you, is very, very robust. I'm not sure if your experience can be really undermine such processes. But truly speaking, as the chair of the audit committee has said, we in the public sector, I think under the leadership of the current AG, we things are done quite credibly and quite appropriately. Chad, there is an issue around politically linked deployment. I think we need to take a very broad discussion on this issue because from where I'm seated, this is an international phenomenon. You can call them political, you can call them cater deployment, whatever that you call it. It's happening in our economy, it's happening in advanced economies, it's happening all over. I think what is key is the point that was raised by Chair. And the mechanisms or the systems that are in place to manage this process. Because it's very difficult at times to tell. If for example, we prescribe competency level, I mean, if you qualify and then you are a leader and then you are not from my party, and then there is someone from my party who qualifies, logic tells. Because, I mean, the result of the matter is that I'm an executive authority who's responsible to drive a certain political agenda. It's happening all over. I mean, you can as well cite an example of what is happening now in one of the so-called developed economies in America. The shenanigans that are happening in Donald Trump's office, they tell you that what is key here is for us to develop appropriate systems to determine the required competencies, but also, in our case, to determine also the relevant remuneration package. And that's exactly what we are doing now. Remember in the past we had in some cases in municipalities where we had municipal managers any more than the president. That they have changed because we have put the systems in place, so it's prescribed as to the grade of the municipality and how much in that municipality. If you are a municipal manager, you must earn. So if you go beyond that, then you must, through the minister, apply for a waiver. And obviously the ministers, through his team, will satisfy her or himself if you meet the necessary requirement to qualify for a waiver. So I'm saying the systems, to me, they are very, very critical. If we have clear systems of managing the competency level, but also managing the remuneration level, some of these things can be easily be managed. But truly speaking, it's not a straightforward conclusion that you can avoid this thing. So the best thing is to have systems that will justify that competent people are appointed, but also they are remunerated appropriately. Chairperson, there is an issue on the political system as raised by honorable member. Our political system is not a constituency-based political system, and that's where the problem comes. Because people are not held accountable by their constituents. They are held accountable by their party. And here in Parliament, the system doesn't allow for any sector, department, or ministry to interfere on how party manage or hold its own members accountable. So that's where the difficulty is. Well, if it was a constituency base, it would be driven differently, because then people will be accounting with sector departments to their constituencies about their programs, and they will be held accountable on the basis of that. But currently, it's a different ballgame. Political parties have a final say. If you spend a year without coming to Parliament, political party have a say that we have assigned our MP to do certain political work. No one has authority over that process. It's only the political party that may make that determination. So I'm saying the political system that we are currently practicing doesn't necessarily accord us those provisions of holding their employees accountable as ministers. So it's a process that is handled differently. And Chair, the other important aspect that I wanted to touch is on this issue of our support to the MIG thing. If you look into the key driver of our slow expenditure, you can easily come to a conclusion that this is mainly happening on the infrastructure development. It's happening in infrastructure development because, Chair, there are various factors that contribute to such. In some cases, it's issues of governance. In some cases, as I cited earlier, it's issues of inadequate skilled personnel and also a high turnover of skilled personnel. But also in some cases, which is a very common trend, is political instability in our municipalities. These are some of the main causes. But at the moment, as a department, I must indicate, Chair and members, that this process of rationalizing MIG and its functions. Because currently MIG is located in the DCOG, and we've established an entity called MISA to look into the shortfalls of MIG. So it creates a lot of problems in terms of maintaining MIG and also MISA into an effective tool of intervention. So that's why there is a need for us to rationalize the functions of the two. So as a result, we are currently locating MIG from DCOG to MISA with the sole intention of creating that necessary alignment. And we think these functions will be located at MISA because MISA, it has all the necessary expertise, and it continues to build capacity to respond to various needs, more especially on infrastructure implementation, as identified in municipalities. But I think the other important thing for the committee to note is that we have taken a decision of not, because this thing of withholding is really disadvantaging communities, more especially on MIG allocations. So we have taken decision of not withholding and reallocation of funds. I mean, what we are going to do, we are, as cited by the CFO, we have started the process of building capacity of handling MIG conversion. So as where municipalities are unable to implement, MISA comes in as an implementing agent, or MISA, working together with other institutions like DBSA, are able to assist that municipality. So as infrastructure development in those municipalities is not compromised. So we think that will help. But now the rest of the matter is that, Chairperson, and I understand your frustration, MISA capacity is very limited. We can't cover all municipalities that are struggling. That's why we must prioritize. And in the main, what is driving our prioritization is the status of, because if you can check, most municipalities that are having problem of rolling out infrastructure projects, these are municipalities that are located in areas with low economic base. So there is that positive correlation between the economic status of a municipality and its level of executing a MIG allocation. There is that positive correlation. So our prioritization, among other things, is guided by such things, you know. So truly speaking, it then suggests that at times you might feel that the impact is not visible because we still have other municipalities struggling. But where we are intervening, as clearly cited in this presentation, there is progress that we are registering. So we can't cover all municipalities that are struggling because of the limited capacity that MISA is currently possessing. So I think as a result of that change, one might feel that we are not doing enough to cover all municipalities. But where we are intervening, there's definitely progress that is being registered. Now, the last point that I wanted to make, Chair, maybe it's on this one of the middlemen, but also the placement of MISA graduates. Middlemen, truly speaking, consultants, as an example, consultants, we all agree that we need to capacitate. But consultants will forever find a market in a situation whereby internally we are not properly capacitated. And I think that's the main condition for middlemen. If there's no internal capacity, obviously you always find middlemen, trying their luck. Or maybe you always find a need for a middleman. So that's why our focus as COCTA is to build internal capacity. Hence, even training, our MISA training is focusing on building capacity within municipalities, you know, but also capacity within a MISA itself. Because if we don't do that, hence we have currently appointed a project management unit just to work on issues of capacity within this implementing agent. So definitely the middleman story is not going to come to an end if we don't address the internal capacity. It's very important that as we do away with consultants or middlemen, then we make sure that internally there are solid provisions for development of our own internal capacity. And lastly, the placement of MISA graduates, I think we need to take a broader discussion here. This is not only the response, I will argue. If really it's about skilling the country and making sure that we have the required skills, I mean, to take our developmental plan forward, it's not only the responsibility of local government, and this is my submission. As I'm saying to our team, as we deal with placement, let's not think only about placing in municipalities. No. There are, in other municipalities, I mean, there are sector department projects that are taking place there. Are we linking our training efforts with those opportunities? There are state-owned enterprises opportunities that are created in some of these municipalities, big projects. Are we linking our own capacitation initiative with those projects? But also private sector. In other communities, there are big, mining operations. And we are training artisans here. We are training many other, people on technical skills. How do we link? Because if we placement is only on the absorption of whom or people that we train is only focusing on municipalities, municipalities might not have enough space to accommodate everyone. Firstly, as you know, it might be an issue of resources, because some municipalities don't even have money to retain these skills that are being trained. Mm-hmm. And hence, there's always an argument of resources following function, you know. Mm-hmm. So that's why we are saying, let's think outside the box and link these MISA graduate programs with the broader labor market, not only local government. Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the approach that we are taking. It goes also to our own public employment programs. In CWP, for an example, we are training people, but they can't exit the program because they can't be absorbed by the labor market. In some cases, we don't even train them. The skills that we train them on, they are not talking to what is required by the market. So we can't think like just as Cogta, you know, without taking consideration that we have a role to play in terms of the realization of the broader national development plan, you know. So our CWP programs must be tuned even beyond the municipal boundaries. And that's the argument that we are currently supporting. And I think even the new model of CWP is going to talk to that as part of the exit strategy that is required to make this program a success. So definitely, Chair, I think those are the few things that I thought one should comment on. Thank you very much.
Honourable Sheikh Imam, you still have
one or two
questions?
I have to actually run for prayer, but I thank the Minister for that presentation, and I see some of the issues have been covered. But, Chair, to actually make it short, I don't know, because I think I also have to leave for prayer. Can I rather make a request of what I'd like to have so that it could be given to us in writing at some stage? Because I hear that there's a serious challenge with skills shortage. Can you give us as a committee a report on that? What is the actual skills shortage and what is the challenges you're facing in terms of that? Because I think it's something that we can address with the other role players. Including, I asked the question of with the AG's report and your internal audit reports and things you get, a report on consequence management, like you have spoken about, in terms of give us the steps and tell us exactly this is what you have done, this is how many people were found repeat offenders that are not performing, all this, because we want to know, we want to see that there's progress in terms of that. And I must agree, Minister, thank you for that issue in terms of trying to restrict or eradicate consultants and the middlemen. That is basically what we want to see, that we rather employ and have a database of people even that may come on a temporary basis that are skilled, actually. So if we can get all that information. But finally, I want to say I'm not in agreement with the statement that we are foolproof in the municipalities, because if that is the case, I'm deployed in the Western Cape, so I'm going to give this as an example. The only reason U.S. COGTA heard about what is happening in the Knysna municipality, because there was a whistleblower came from the outside. All the systems that you have had in place have not picked up the corruption and what was happening in Knysna. It came from somebody inside who gave us the information. So I'm saying, based on that, the system that we have, as much as it is good, but it's not foolproof. There's still a hell of a lot that's happening, and we need to address that. I'm going to stop there for now. Thank you.
Honourable, do you want to raise questions that might be responded to in writing?
Yes and no. I'll take the acting CEO's contact details. I've got some stories that I wanted to share, but the time doesn't allow. And I will communicate with him about something, as which is not in the presentation, something about the rural municipalities, a particular rural municipality. That's why I'm saying it's a story that I want to share with him about some areas. In fact, it's not even a municipality, it's an area within a municipality in KwaZulu-Natal, for that matter, Ukahlamba area. There are things that I really would have liked to talk about, but I will talk to the CEO. Thanks.
Your closing remarks, Minister? Almost.
Budgeted 4 o'clock for this session. No. Once more, thank you very much, Chair, and I think I should appreciate the members of the committee for the valuable input that they have made. I think this will go a long way in ensuring that we also look on how we improve on executing our constitutional mandate. Thank you very much, and definitely we mustn't just wait for such session, Chair. When there is a need to engage informally, let's take advantage. Thank you very much.
Yes. Let me also thank the members of the committee for their attendance. Few as we are, I think we had we had the advantage of hearing things that that the others who are not here have not heard, and we're able to raise very important questions. I would like also to thank the department, the minister, for your attendance. I want to emphasize this point I made earlier on, that it is important for the executives to be seen accounting to Parliament, and that responsibility is not relegated to the heads of departments. And our appreciation, therefore, for your presence arises from that recognition, and we hope that executives can be very busy very often, but when we request the department to appear before the committee and you are present, and if not, if you're not available, at least your deputy, that would be would be appreciated. Look, we are aware that there are certain targets that must be met by 2019, and it would be very important that those targets are met by this department. We need to build on the confidence, and I say this deliberately, build on the confidence that communities have on large, broadly speaking, on COGTA and on the municipalities that fall under yourselves. I say building on this confidence because there is evidence of a clean water supply. There is evidence of households connected to electricity, grid and non-grid. There is evidence of clean surroundings through the removal of refuse, etc., and so on. We are not saying that is sufficient, and that's why we say there is confidence of communities in the department, in the municipalities, and let's build on that confidence and ensure that by 2019 the targets that are set by the medium-term strategic framework are attained, to strengthen and consolidate that kind of confidence. We therefore have got to be aware of certain things that can, jeopardize that kind of confidence that we must keep on building on. Issues such as irregular and wasteful expenditure, issues relating to underspending on goods and services, underspending on infrastructure, both maintenance of infrastructure and building new infrastructure where it is necessary, especially in the rural areas. Issues relating to poor internal audit and risk management systems, etc. Regression in terms of the outcomes, because there are moments where departments, score quite high in terms of their performance in one financial year, perhaps for 2-3 consecutive financial years. The next moment you look at the audit outcome, there is regression. And that can undermine the kind of confidence and the kind of impact that we expect out of your budgets and your implementation of your programs. Delays in filling the critical posts, which could undermine your capacity. And we are glad, Honorable Minister, you are looking at other areas that would otherwise have been neglected in the past. You spoke about communication, direct communication with the communities. You spoke about better capacity of MISA, for instance, and so on, better capacitation of the municipalities themselves, especially those that have very low revenue base and so on. These are some of the things that if we don't take stock of and improve on, could undermine this kind of confidence I am speaking about. So the issues we raised earlier on, for instance, on strengthening the intergovernmental relations and intergovernmental fiscal relations so that there is collaboration at all levels and accountability as well throughout the spheres of government. And ourselves as public representatives serving in this committee on behalf of Parliament need to also jack up our work and ensure that at all material times we are able to say to hold you accountable to Parliament and hold you accountable to the public as well, so that we sustain and build on the capacity that and build on the confidence that our population have on our government. With those words, let me thank all of you and wish you safe travel over the weekend, and indeed a very a comfortable weekend to all of you. Thank you very much. And the meeting is adjourned.
No, I was trying to tell her that you can't meet every day.
How are members going to meet these documents?
We are basically meeting.
We are meeting the same.